Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. Coming to you live from O'Brien's Irish Pub in historic downtown Temple, Texas, it's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club's second annual St. Patrick's Day extravaganza. Tonight, the boys celebrate the only way they know how, which is dangerously intoxicated, as they perform critical film analysis of the 1990 tiny magical leprechaun stuck in a beer bottle classic, Getting Lucky. I'm not so sure just how critically that film needs to be analyzed, but what the hell do I know? One thing we all do know for sure is that it's impossible to have a good time without getting nice and shit-faced. So this evening, many a pint of Murphy's Irish Stout will be poured while our gang lights up the bright green Double Claro No. 48 cigar from La Flor Dominicana. It sounds like our Tuesday night heroes are going to have more fun than Sinead O'Connor at a misery and sadness convention. Really, guys, it's only the second year for this quote-unquote Irish extravaganza, and that's the best you can come up with. Sinead O'Connor at a misery and sadness convention. The drinking must have started a little early this year, folks. Big surprise. Anywho. Sit back, folks, light them up, and enjoy the show.
Oh, everybody got your whiskey and your beer?
Check.
Whiskey, cigar,
check. Beer, check.
Whiskey, beer, cigar. All right.
Short list.
Oh. Boys, tonight's film, as you know, showcases the longest, I believe, the longest running war we've ever witnessed in modern civilization.
Afghanistan?
Afghanistan? No. The longest-running war between the jocks and the nerds. It's been going on for centuries.
Nerds!
And I'm sorry, dummy, but Rambo defeated the Afghanistans using only a knife and an old horse. Everybody knows that?
Did you have to call him a dummy?
You know, Yak Boy, some might call you a dummy.
But I just think you're a baked potato.
Sucker! I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?
No. Sorry for calling him stupid, or you're sorry for calling him a baked potato?
Both?
No.
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 Ah, whatever. It was funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
More whiskey. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast, episode 47.
Wow, that's good whiskey.
I
didn't realize it did that.
More importantly,
it is our second annual St. Patrick's Day drinking extravaganza.
Notice you added the word drinking this year.
Huh?
You added the word drinking this year.
What was it last year? Just our St. Patrick's Day extravaganza?
I don't remember.
Well, let's just call it like it is.
What exactly is the difference between an extravaganza, a soiree, and a mixer?
I believe an extravaganza is one step up from a bonanza.
What about a box social?
It's extra.
A box social?
Yeah, where does that fit in?
I'm not allowed to go to those.
Oh, okay. I remember why.
It's an issue with the county courthouse.
Yeah, you're limited to hootenannies and hoedowns.
No, I can go to hootenannies. I am no longer allowed to go to hoedowns. G's up, hoedowns, but not just hoedowns.
But for the grace of God, there go all of us.
Good God, it's good to see you, Doc.
It's good to see you too, Mr.
Welcome, everybody. It is St. Patrick's Day. I'm your host, Matt Cade. To my right, as always, Mr. Cody Leshker. Next to him, the doctor himself. And
cheers.
On the other side of the table from me, Mr. Jason Tuttle with the headphones. Boys, I've been looking forward to this since last St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, been looking forward to that.
Everything Irish tonight, including our tempers.
I even got my shirt Irish-ish.
Keep the jacket on.
I wore gray like the color of the Irish Sea.
Hey, pinch him. He's not wearing green.
You don't know why I don't have green on.
But I do.
How'd you get him? I wore a green bracelet just so this guy would keep his paws off of me until I take it off later.
Thanks for your support. Hey, he's not wearing green. Pinch him. Then you turn to Tut. Did you get him?
I learned that at the...
I really need to see you pinch him.
Growing up on the Hootenanny circuit, I learned a few things. A lot of pinching going on at the Hootenannies.
At extravaganzas, we don't pinch.
No. At bonanzas, there's a lot of pinching.
And I'm wearing a green thong.
For medical purposes?
Are there any other kind?
Well, You know what, boys? Seriously, let's get right to it. I want to get right to the drink and the smoke. We have a ton, a shit ton, I believe is the Irish term. We have a whole bushel of baked potatoes of stuff to talk about tonight. So let's light up, and I'll get to all of it. Tonight, we're going to be smoking the Double Claro number 48 from La Flor Dominica. Dominicana, I should say. You guys notice anything unusual about the cigar?
It's green as fudge.
He is a cigar expert.
Yeah.
It is a green Candela cigar. Look at
it's
that.
More, it's more green like Frankenstein's skin, but whatever.
I was going to say Frankenstein's wiener, but...
It smells like Frankenstein's dick!
It actually does not have the usual real strong grassy... Usually when you smell a Candela cigar, it's very grassy and...
You're about to say, it doesn't smell as pungent as Frankenstein's dick.
Steams the nostrils.
But usually a Candela cigars have that fresh kind of lawn clipping smell to it. This doesn't really have that.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit richer smell in the... Maybe a little sweeter? But it is a 6 7/8 by 48... they're calling it a Churchill. I'm going to read the description off the famous smoke shop website, since they certainly know their stuff better than I. La Flor Dominicana Claro is La Flor's first ever Candela cigar. The blend features an Ecuadorian Candela wrapper surrounding a blend of Dominican long fillers, grown on La Flor Dominicana's own La Canela farm. It also features Nicaraguan binders. While medium in strength and body, the cigar offers full flavors with a distinctly sweet, toasty aroma. It's everything you love about a Candela with a flavor profile built for those who enjoy La Flor Dominicana's signature heartiness. A hearty Candela. So sweet and toasty, as professional internet cigar experts, we'll be the judge of that. Thank you very much. It's worth mentioning that last year, this manufacturer, La Flor Dominicana, had Cigar Aficionado's number one cigar of the year. It was the Andalusian Bowl, which I have not had, so I can't really comment on it. But I was kind of hoping one of you would get me one for Christmas, but that didn't come to fruition. So.
No, it did not.
Maybe next year.
The Andalusian Bowl was when you picked up a 7-10 split.
Is that true?
No.
Oh. That was blown away for a second.
It's going to be a long...
Yeah.
I haven't had that many LFDs. I had the Lennox, and I love the Lennox. I
thought Lennox
was very good. I thought that was a very good cigar.
I thought the Lennox was...
Okay. Well, what Irish beer would one pair with such a unique cigar?
Any Irish beer.
Which we have chosen Murphy's
Stout. You say.
I did like a Canadian Irish. Murphy's, eh?
Murphy's.
Forget the Canuck over there pretending to be one of us, Yak Boy. Tell us about the Murphy's.
It'd be foolish just to call it Murphy's Irish Stout, considering they are Irish, so they just call it Stout.
Kind of like Canadian bacon.
Do they just...
Actually, they call it pea meal bacon. So the comparison holds no weight.
Yeah, it's no good.
More whiskey.
Sounds to me like someone may have been going to the cask before the show started, wouldn't you say?
You can't prove that.
Murphy's was started by James J. Murphy and his brother in 1856. They put out their first barrel of beer.
1856. That's over 100 years ago.
Correct. Here in 2006, they celebrated their 150th year.
So they were making beer before Ireland was actually an independent nation.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Impressive.
Very.
Now, is he actually still brewing the beer, or has it been passed down to...
No.
He's dead, certainly.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
If not, then we should all drink more Murphy's because it is an elixir of life.
I'm pretty sure fans of the beer would say that already.
Too true. The brewery itself...
It's black.
It's dark.
Yes, very dark. It's listed more as a dry stout, which stouts are primarily are given thing. Their flavors come from the roasted malts or okay. barley, which really give them the darker. I mean, all stouts are porters, but the stronger ones, which tend to be been referred to as a stout porter, and then just basically took on the short version, just being called a stout.
Okay. I actually read somewhere this was on a little more on the sweeter side of some stouts, which made me think maybe it would complement the cigar maybe a little bit better if it brought a little sweetness, but I'm not getting it.
I mean, rating it in comparison to the most well-known Irish stout, Guinness, it comes off as being a little bit, I guess you could say, sweeter, maybe smoother. It doesn't have quite the... doesn't have quite that roasted. You really taste that with Guinness.
Yeah.
This one comes off, and this one is also kind of classified more as being the... It's still very well known, but it's not as known as Guinness. They're like the second largest producer of stout in Ireland.
What's a smooth, easy drinking beer so far?
Super smooth, really. Impressive head.
The head is extremely creamy.
Maintaining a nice head on there.
Nice little froth to it. Like I said, but it's real easy. It's real easy to get down.
It is a really easy head to get down. And far too soon to tell. Correct, Doctor? I'm the cigar parent.
I would say yes, Mr. Kate. I'm afraid it is far too early.
It's actually far too early for me to even comment on the cigar. So let's go to our next order of business. Let everybody get some beer and smoke in them. As you can see here in the middle of the table, unfortunately, we have the Boot of Remembrance. We hate bringing this out, but every once in a while we feel compelled to pay our respects to a fallen person of worth. May 17th, 1955, Bill Paxton, the actor, was born in Fort Worth, Texas. Fellow Texan, and sadly, very sadly, he passed away rather suddenly at the age of 61, just a few weeks ago, February 25th.
Too young, man.
Due to heart valve surgery complications. I kind of mentioned on Facebook and some on the Tuesday night stuff that, you know, so I just think it's weird when people get too emotional about celebrities passing away, someone you never knew, but he's one of those guys that, you know, I've just been such a fan of, a huge fan of for so long. That one did stung. It was, we joked about it a lot. You kind of got under our skin about it, how you didn't like the guy, but I think you admitted it was mainly just to get us worked up. But, Mincy, you want to...
No.
Doctor, you want to say a few things, or...
Sure. I guess, for me... you know, you mentioned he's born in Fort Worth in 55, and like a lot of actors and that the same age did not have any kind of overnight success, really paid his dues, both in New York and Los Angeles, and just a really long career, a storied career. I think the first thing that I would have seen him in would have been The Terminator. It was one of the punks at the beginning. I didn't know that was him the first time I saw it. The first time I really put the name with the face was probably Aliens.
Yeah.
Of course, he's also in Weird Science, and it's pointless to sit here and try and list the filmography. It goes on and on. You know, he worked a lot with Jim Cameron. You know, you've got Tombstone, he's got Apollo 13, Twister, Titanic. It goes on and on. Truly a gifted performer. I didn't get a chance to see any of the TV show that he was on recently at the time of his death, Training Day, but... The things
I'm not even sure if it made it to air yet. I think it might have been like in the...
I think it may have had a few episodes, but I don't know. I did see some things that he was in the last few years, which were some History Channel productions.
Hatfield McCoy's...
He was great in that as Randall McCoy.
He was really good in that. Yeah.
And he was great as Sam Houston in Texas Rising. And the point that I wanted to make about that, about, you know, you talk about how you're such a fan of the guy, you know, as long as you can remember. To me, the best thing that you can really... say about an actor as a compliment is what kind of range they have. And it's one thing to point out the difference between the smarmy used car dealer in True Lies, which is just a fantastic character that he plays, and say Sam Houston 20 years later, but even his Sam Houston and his Randall McCoy, which were separated by like 2 years, completely different. Just period pieces, but completely different characters.
That's a good point.
There are far more recognized actors, not in terms of people recognizing them as who they are, but as far as in kind of accolades they receive, that in my mind are nowhere near as talented. You know, if you do one thing good and you can do a variation on it over and over again, you can, you know, be celebrated in Hollywood. Paxton's not a guy that does one thing over and over again really good. This guy's just incredibly diverse. So yeah, I was very sad to see him go, but well, he'll be missed here on the Mortal Coil. If you're a fan or whether you don't know much about him, look at IMDb. It's a diverse filmography, and it's certainly, those are out there for everybody to enjoy.
It sure does.
R.I.P. Wild Bill.
Earlier this year, I got into a heated debate with an old friend of ours about the best working character actors out there. By that, I mean performers who kind of seldom take a leading role, but more often pop up in supporting roles and just literally chew up every scene they're in and spit it out. And at the top of my list was Bill Paxton. I mean, every time the guy popped up in a project, you know, starting with, you mentioned Big Brother Chet and Weird Science, the weird vampire Severin in Near Dark, Private Hudson in Aliens, all the way to my personal favorite performance of his, Simon, the bullshit con artist in True Lies. He just demands your attention by the little character choices he makes. And his choices were rarely, if ever, wrong in my book. He turned a tiny nothing part in 1984's Terminator. Anybody else does that part, we're not quoting that. Laundry day, right?
I mean, this guy's a couple kids short of six pack.
He came in and killed that role, and that's why that role is something.
Doesn't he have like a Sex Pistols blue spiked hair?
He's got a blue spiked hair, and he came in and he just slayed. And that's why we remember that role. He even shines in cinematic duds like Predator 2 and, I don't know if you saw a couple years ago, Haywire, the Gina Carano action flick. Yeah. He played her dad in that. When he popped up, he just brought a you know, it was a film with a lot of non-actors in it. When he showed up, it just brought an instant credibility to it. Whenever I saw Paxton's name appear in the opening credits, I just kind of felt excited and a little bit of relief because I knew I was at least going to see one thing good, and it was like whatever he was going to bring to it.
He absolutely, since we're all Texans here, the Texas Rising took some liberties with history. But other than him, and I remember thinking the guy that played Santa Ana, that French actor, Olivier Martinez, I hadn't seen him in anything, and I was like, wow, he's really good. And I was like, is he? Or is it just because other than him and Paxton, this is just a group of duds in here?
Yeah, even in a disaster. Even in a fucking disaster of a project.
He steals the scene.
He'll put on his shoulders and at least make those scenes memorable. Yak-Boy, your favorite memory or favorite role? I'm going to guess with you it's got to be Weird Science.
Probably is.
Yeah.
But in that same time period, he had just a... Once again, it was just a bit part. I mean, he was on screen maybe twice. Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire.
1984. Loved it.
I could see you going there, too. Tut, you were the always the Paxton denier of the group. You loved to give us hell about how he was worthless. What do you say now that he's dead?
Paxton.
I heard that many a nights.
No, I didn't start taking him. I'm not as big a fan, obviously, as you guys are. When he was on, he was extremely good. But there's times where he does certain character that I just can't stand.
Tombstone.
The Tombstone character, I can't... Was it Morgan? Yeah. And I understand that was actually a deliberate choice of the way he played it. I can understand that. Even his portrayal in Apollo 13, I wasn't that big of a fan of. I didn't really start getting on board. I mean, the aliens character, good God. I don't know. It might be my anti-nerd that comes in with the game over, man. I'm just like, come on. That's not the greatest scene in the world.
No, it's literally the thing everybody remembers about that movie.
I didn't pick up on Paxton.
No, I love that character. I love Private Hudson.
I didn't pick up on
Paxton.
Sarge,
you're going to get lip cancer smoking those things.
I didn't pick up on Paxton until Frailty.
Doctor does a good Paxton.
Frailty, I think, is one of the most underrated Paxton movies, where he did a just fantastic job. He wasn't over the top. And that's a hard role because his character is basically hearing and seeing God tell him to kill demons, yeah, which are just
paper towel or
other people. It's really easy to take that character and go over the top with it. And Paxton made him extremely believable, dislikable, but at the same time, you know, not he made him human. Yeah. And that's a really tough job to do. You mentioned earlier the Hatfield and McCoy. He shared some screenplay with some really good or screen time with some really really good actors, and he outshone them. I mean, he just flat out destroyed
other than Kevin. Kevin Costner's in it, Tom Berenger, and it's like it's very. Like I said, it's the two period pieces, but Sam Houston's the hard drinking Indian fighter who's, you know, leading the ragtag army, and McCoy is kind of like a simple
Christian man. Yeah. He's religious, he's family oriented, he's justice wise, but he's also a little bit uneducated. That was a very complex part, and it's real easy to turtle up when you're supposed to play religious conservative. And you've either got two choices. You can turtle up and go meek, or you can go fire and brimstone. And he didn't either. He walked a great line on that. So later in the career, I did become a begrudgingly
Paxton guy. Well,
you know,
he directed Frailty, which I wonder how much of that his own personal directorial style played into what you liked about the film and his performance. But it's a shame we won't get to see more of that. I think that's...
Oh, and I hated when he sniffed the dirt and Twister. For some reason, that bothered me.
See, I felt inclined to mention Twister at Apollo 13, but when I think of Paxton, old school Paxton,
I don't think of
I'm
those
thinking
movies.
Of Aliens, True Lies, yeah. and to a lesser degree, Weird Science, because I'm a big John Hughes fan. But to me, it's Private Hudson and Simon are right,
yeah.
like
now
and
I will
and
say
guys.
Now I will say I didn't start respecting him till Frailty, but to me, my favorite character of his is True Lies, the car salesman.
Another reason I don't watch the Oscars, how that doesn't get a Best Supporting Actor. I mean, the guy just... It's one of those universally just... You know, how can you not love that character?
It's not just the game over. It's the entire Private Hudson breakdown. That's right, man. Bishop should go. This little girl managed to live long. I'll put her in charge. Come on.
Shut up, Hudson.
He's fantastic.
Shut up.
I can't. I still can't watch it. True Lies came on last week. It comes on like every other day on Stars, and I turned it on, and there he was for a second, and he was sitting there talking to Jamie Lee Curtis and about his mission.
So you recognize my style. That's good.
It's good. You're learning. I can't take all the credit. She's like, it's the training. And I turned it off. It was too soon. Much like I couldn't watch They Live for the podcast after Roddy Piper, we had to go Frogtown. It's way too soon.
I'm sorry,
for me
the
to,
timing of the. It's the training.
It's the training. So, Mr. Paxton, thank you so damn much for entertaining us for so damn long.
Man, you died too soon, man.
Soon. Happy trails on to the next chapter. And, you know, man, the guy delivered. Got delivered. So, to the Miss Paxton.
Game over, man. Too soon.
Hudson, sir. He's Hicks.
You guys want a swig?
Yeah, I'll swig to Bill Paxton. Right.
I thought we were going to take a little tipple of this to.
No, I'm going to do that next. Drinks for the boot, drink from the whiskey, then we'll drink some more beers.
And then some more whiskey?
Then we'd go back to the whiskey.
Whiskey, yes.
It is
yes.
Our big Irish extravaganza.
And for you, Tut, we're in some real pretty shit now, man. What are we going to do?
No, I have a feeling the doctor will be saying that for real in about 3 hours. Mainly because tonight's film. With no further ado...
Yaks, man, just doing a booting?
Finish it off, Yaks. Yak, boy. Yeah. Oh, real quick, before we get to the film, and my God, we have such a film to talk about here.
Do we? God.
Tonight, in the spirit of St. Paddy's Day in Ireland, we are doing In the Name of the Father, Daniel Day-Lewis.
We sure should have.
I kid. Real quick, do you want to give a quick plug to the pub? This is going to be airing before St. Patrick's Day, so you want to give a quick shout-out to O'Brien's pub in historic downtown Temple, Texas?
Yes, this is historic time.
10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary. All right, this is 10th St. Patrick's Day.
O'Brien's X.
Are you going to have live music?
Yes.
Authentic Irish cuisine.
Yes.
Made by authentic Irishmen.
Kinda.
Oh, they will be drunk.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Cody Onesker.
This is just a hot dog with sauerkraut thrown on it.
I said.
No, haggis. What are you guys going to have?
That's Scottish.
Oh.
Corned beef and cabbage.
Corned beef and cabbage.
Bangers
fish
and mash.
Chips. Bangers and mash.
Shepherd's pie.
Shepherd's pie. What about Irish desserts?
Whiskey.
Whiskey. Green whiskey. You can have green beer. Everybody wants green beer.
Everybody wants green beer. Yes,
I do not understand the green beer thing, man.
Dude, I made it my whole life without drinking a green beer.
I think I've actually had one, and I was like, well, I feel stupid.
Yeah. I remember you drinking ice.
People
want
green
that.
Beer.
I wasn't the voice
I personally
of my
am not a huge fan of green beer, because if it's green on one day, why won't you drink it the next day? Why does it need to be green?
I plan to lead anyone interested in a soccer riot.
He's not kidding. Does it make your poop green the next day?
Probably. I don't drink it.
See, all over my idea to blow up a car.
I just drink Guinness and whiskey.
Guinness and whiskey. Close to
together.
What we're doing tonight. We're doing it the real way. But no, you guys always have a great crowd. You're going to have live music, I imagine, all day
yes.
long.
Yes.
Going to be cooking, drinking.
It is the one day we open up early. Early.
I'll be there at 6:30 a.m.
Too early.
Damn it. I'm out. I'll be drunk by 7. I got to support my Irish roots. Hmm? Welsh is in Ireland, right? Wales?
No.
I'm going to fact check that.
Wales locations. Borders England on its southeast corner. It's not even connected to Ireland.
It isn't. Oh, they drink a lot there, too.
Well, Richard Burton is from Miss Wales, so that's good enough for me.
They drink a lot in Wales. Well, get
they're
it. Welsh, everyone,
of course they do.
Everyone head down to historic downtown Temple, Texas. Go to O'Brien's Irish Pub. You'll be there, I'm sure.
I will be there.
You're always there.
And it was oddly enough, I'll post up an article, if I remember it. It was like 10 fabulous pubs that you need to visit. Like, and there was like Boston and New York and L.A., and I was reading the descriptions of all this, and I was like, well, hell, we got that in Central Texas.
And oh, I thought you were going to say O'Brien's was on the list.
I was about to say, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Working on it. Tuttle be running around in little peppermint striped tights and some buckled shoes.
No, I will break out the kilt.
I was going to say, you'd be wearing your kilt?
Hell yeah.
Is that Irish?
Somewhat.
No, it's not, actually.
You're as Irish as I am.
Well, that's why my shirt says Irish-ish.
Do the Welsh, they hate the Scots, don't they?
Probably. They pretty much all don't like each other. English, Welsh, Irish, Scots.
They like clock this over. Other. You and I will talk later.
I'm Texan.
I've always embraced my Welsh roots because I know there's that one day I'm going to be in the hotel bar and in walks Catherine Zeta-Jones. That's my inn. She's Welsh. Be like, hey, baby.
Do you want to follow Michael Douglas?
Didn't he get cancer going down on her?
Yes.
That is not a good sign.
You know what? Perhaps I should embrace my Swedish roots.
Although, being a man of science, I'm not exactly sure that's how it happened. I don't know that there's a correlation there. Could be.
Perhaps if I embrace my Swedish roots, next time at hotel bar and Suzanne Summers walks in.
Yes.
You're getting an awful lot like Frank Drebin now. Scotch-Romanian. Odd combination. Well, so are my parents.
Well, all jokes aside, it is a great time. So get down there. Get your ass down to O'Brien's. Do it.
Please do.
Will you be wearing
the left? Make sure to ask him if you can see his pot of gold.
I've seen it.
Well,
Are you going to be wearing the your leprechaun hat that you're wearing?
Yes, I am.
Tune in. If you're not, if you're listening to this, you're missing out. Go over to YouTube. Cody's got his lucky leprechaun hat on. As the night goes on, it'll grow taller and taller, which the four of us certainly know nothing about.
I just like the whole green hat with the Candela cigar.
Mm-hmm. It's like Pinocchio's nose. The hat just grows taller and taller as we start telling fewer and fewer truths.
Well, we should start seeing results very quickly. I love you guys. Did you do anything?
No.
It will.
Well, boys, tonight's film is in actuality not In the Name of the Father. It was a close call. Instead, I went with a peculiar film. 1990s peculiar. Getting Lucky.
Peculiar, you say?
Getting Lucky. Available free on Amazon Prime right now.
Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free.
Written and directed by Michael Paul Gerard. Whose name you might recognize as
Michael Paul Gerard Depardieu.
Different Michael Paul Gerard.
Oh, okay.
You might recognize him as the director of 1989's Oversexed Rug Munchers from Mars, 1994's Bikini Med School, 1996's Bikini House Calls, 1997's Operation Dalmatian, The Big Adventure,
and 1997's The English Patient.
And, well, no, finally, 2002's Babes 2, Lost in Beaver Creek. Which is not, by the way, affiliated with those Babe Pig movies.
No, I
wish I knew that before I watched it with my kids. That's on me. I'll own that mistake.
No, I've actually seen that one. Now that you mention it, yeah, this will be a great discussion tonight because I can pinpoint like his artistic style.
You saw Babes 2, Lost in Beaver Creek?
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
No.
You saw the pig movies.
Yeah.
Now he
That'll do, pig.
That'll do, pig. Boy, which one of those movies doesn't belong in that filmography? All those movies and then Operation Dalmatian, The Big Adventure.
That was actually an adult movie.
Just a kid, that was actually...
I thought that was another euphemism.
I'm understanding Dalmatian. I'm definitely checking out Rug Munchers from Mars. That sounds
speckled?
Interesting.
I mean, what's going on here?
This guy knows how to title some movies. Well, we kick things off by a video introduction. This was ripped clearly off the DVD of the film, so it actually has the DVD introduction on there.
Well, what's funny is that if you look at the date from Amazon Prime, it's 2009, and I was like, wow, they went all out to try to make it look 80s.
Yeah, no, the DVD came out in 2009, 19 years, I guess it was the 20th anniversary almost of Getting Lucky's theatrical premiere.
By some reason, I really get the feeling that they just found it like on a shelf somewhere. What the hell is this? Who knows? Throw it out there.
Well, we get an introduction by Troma team president Lloyd.
Pretty sure that's exactly what happened.
Lloyd Kaufman, independent film legend Lloyd Kaufman, as the distinguished distributor of Getting Lucky, we see Lloyd lying on his office floor, chugging a beer,
just
puking up beer.
And that is the problem with independent film, if he is a legend in it.
Shit-talking the film itself, and he can't pronounce the director's name. He says it doesn't matter because nobody is going to like this movie anyway. But this is pure Troma. If you guys have ever watched...
I haven't.
Minty and I were discussing this a little bit earlier. Him, not so much. Me, I went through a phase where I bought up all the Troma VHS tapes. Terra Firma, obviously their claim to fame is the Toxic Avenger movies.
Now, I haven't seen the Toxic Avenger, but I'm familiar with it. I mean, it's iconic.
That's their kind of franchise, tentpole franchise. But I love Terra Firma, Poultrygeist. That's where the possessed chicken, Poultrygeist. Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD was a good one. Redneck Zombies. But it's just nothing but bad acting, nudity, shoddy production value. But
all right, well, I got 1 out of 3 in that. I can hang in.
So he's laying there on the ground making blowjob jokes and kind of puking on himself. It's just pure Troma. It makes me happy. Then all of a sudden, there's this fat guy with a.
Well, there's a cool chick in front of that.
There's a chick on the ground, and then she leaves, and a fat guy with a beard and a bikini or something lays there, and Lloyd Kaufman rolls over to make out with him, and thankfully we leave to watch the movie. But that is all those Troma VHS had this similar.
And it's at this point that I realize that we made a terrible mistake.
I told Cody, there's no we. I made the mistake. I own it. But this is going to be one of those nights.
No.
It's all over there.
No,
this is, I showed you guys the trailer and you signed off on it.
We did sign off on it.
But
we're responsible for this.
But in my defense, I was drunk on my back deck.
This is going to be one of those nights.
We had just been where we 8 hours doing hipster.
We elevate the source material and we do it one better to where what we're going to do here tonight is going to knock the shit out of the original story.
I think the doctor should pick the next 3 or 4 movies.
Oh, I have no idea that we will give Getting Lucky the best treatment it has ever gotten.
Oh, you guys are in for a treat.
Maybe the only treatment it's ever gotten.
Both you guys and you guys listening at home, guys and gals, are in for a treat tonight. So buckle up, grab some whiskey and some beer.
Open up those ear holes because TNCC's coming in.
We're coming in fast and...
Fast and gay, like you might say.
And get ready for a lot of leprechaun voice. I know I've been waiting all day for it.
Pour your whiskey on your Lucky Charms.
Everybody, real quick, the cigar. Everybody's kind of getting into it here. They are a different, you know, Candelas are a different beast. What do you guys... this is one of the more stronger Candelas I've had. It's got some weight to it. It's also got a little bit of a harshness to it.
It does. I can't... I'm really not picking up too much right now.
I've always kind of found that with Candelas is that there's a little bit of a bitterness to it.
It's got it's harsh and it's got a dryness to it.
I'm not getting much either.
But what I like about it is that the strength of it's not what I've normally gotten in Candelas.
No.
It's not as strong as the Roma Craft Candela that they came out with.
Which I would love to do. Unfortunately, they're on short supply right now.
Right.
We tried to get the Fomorian.
But the LFD Candela isn't, you know, that far behind it. And I like... That's one of the things that... I like Candelas for a change of pace. I like the wheatiness of it, the grassiness of it.
It's very different.
It's an extremely different taste. A lot of people, you know... Well, I'm not going to say a lot of people. I do know people that do not like Candelas. I've always been kind of like it's a nice curveball to throw in every now and then, so I kind of dig it, and especially like when you get that every now and then you'll get a Candela that transports you to a wheat field or like to the Great Plains where you can just smell grass and hay.
I'm hoping this settles down a little bit and gives us that. Right now it's just
it's not really on the wheat. Yeah, it actually's got more strength than anything, but I'm not afraid of the Candelas. I actually kind of think it's funny because every time when I'm watching like Simon and Simon or Magnum PI, Candelas were actually pretty popular in the 80s.
In the 80s, Candelas, I believe, were the most popular. Yeah, everybody was smoking. That's my Uncle Dave, who was kind of my cigar guru growing up. I'd watch him smoke. He smoked the Grenadier Candelas that came in the gray box. I mean, that was his go-to cigar was... a Corona Grenadier, and that's kind of what when I first started smoking cigars, that's what I smoked. But I wasn't looking for notes of anything. I was just waiting out at the park for the doctor to show up in high school and start our whatever adventure we had planned that day, which was usually just staying at the park and drinking.
Sometimes we'd go to the kettle.
Sometimes we'd go to the kettle. The doctor would be kind enough to... I usually was a little low on cash, and he'd buy me a nice breakfast.
As construction goes, it's a really well-constructed cigar. LFD does a pretty good beautifully. Job of this. It's got a nice smoke profile. This is only the second LFD, but I'm noticing a similar smoke profile.
Tons of smoke.
To the Lennox. I like it a lot. The draw is easy. It's a nice smoking cigar. The burn is consistent.
Yeah.
It feels good in your hands. Not spongy.
Hey.
That's what she said.
Unfortunately, she does not.
Construction wise, no complaints. The beautiful cap clipped off, lots of smoke, razor sharp burn line, ash is holding steady. Just right now, I'm not sure what this thing is. We'll find out.
Yeah. The beer is straight up consistent, creamy, not bitter. I mean, it's an easy drinking.
They're certainly not hurting each other in any aspect.
No.
They're not helping each other. The beer needs no help. The beer is what it is, and it's delicious.
Yes. It's just a slight hint of coffee. More malty than coffee.
I get malt and coffee, yeah. Good call. No chocolate.
Yeah.
Last week's stout we did, the Left Hand Brewery's Milk Stout Nitro was Chocolate City. It was delicious. Yes. This is no chocolate whatsoever.
I got to say, I'm a fan of the way the Irish stouts rock. There's a difference between the Irish stouts and the craft beer American stouts. Craft beer America, if you say stout, then it has to be a coffee stout. It has to be a chocolate stout. Very few that I've been tasting here recently ever venture over into the creamy side, which that's the wheelhouse of your Irish stouts.
And I gotta, for once we're in agreement on something. I prefer the creamy foreign stouts myself. I'm not a big, I don't know, this is where Skip's Romacraft's turning our show off. The guy loves American stouts and porters. But no, I love the creamy style of the English, the Boddingtons.
I'm not afraid. I'm not.
Boddingtons isn't a stout, though, correct?
I don't mind
cream ale.
I don't mind the coffee and the milk stouts and the chocolatey. There's a place for that, but I wish more Americans would try to go into the creamy style stouts.
Nothing wrong with being smooth. Nothing wrong with being smooth.
Like Billy Dee Williams.
I base my whole life around that philosophy.
Yeah. Around Billy Dee Williams?
Unsuccessfully, but
I'm trying to determine what the difference is between this and Guinness, because I really like Guinness. You can tell the difference. I can't quite describe it.
There's a sweetness to Guinness. There's a little bit of a bitter backbite.
Well, Yax mentioned about the roastedness of the Guinness is what that's exactly how I would differentiate. That Guinness has that roasted quality to it that this completely bypasses. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful, dark, smooth beer.
Looks-wise, it is beautiful.
And just, you know, I think any, it's not watery by any means, but any lighter, I think it might get a little...
Portery.
Like, there's not a lot of weight to it on the swallow.
Well, like Yak said that all stouts are technically porters, but not all porters are stouts. You ease up on the lightness on this, and now you're definitely in the porter range.
To be continued, especially on the cigar. I want to come back to that sooner than later. You guys want to dig in this film a little bit?
Well, if we must.
Oh, we must.
Let's feel like I'm getting lucky.
After some poorly done opening credits, you're going to hear that term used a lot, featuring some blurry cheerleaders, and the credits are presented in what looks like children's colorful crayon writing. We're introduced, which I'm pretty sure those same crayons were used to write the script. We're introduced to our hero, Bill Higgins, as he wakes up for school. We're actually introduced to the teenager as he rolls out of bed in his nothing but his tube socks and his tidy whiteys, tut style. That's how I picture you sleeping.
Tidy whiteys, no,
and
sir.
Tube socks.
No, sir. Tube socks, yes. No.
I'm seeing Tut in the full birthday suit with the tube socks.
Well, I am now. I wish a leprechaun would come grant me a wish right this instant.
Third one on his junk.
And we proceed to be shown the
chili
rest.
Chili pepper style. Right.
The rest of the credits while watching Bill get dressed for school. We just sit there and watch him get dressed. Doctor, this scene certainly had your name written all over it.
In what way?
As a man of science, I'm sure you like observing human nature, and you had to like watching Bill Higgins get dressed.
It wasn't much about Bill Higgins that I admired.
That was a test, and you passed.
Now, there's another young man in this film that we'll get to later on.
We'll get to the Chinooka. We know Bill's a nerd because he wears thick glasses and he rides his 10-speed bicycle to school as a senior. He rides it very slowly and sloppily because he has two...
He was rocking that sweet London Fog jacket.
He did have a sweet... was it a members only or London Fog?
That seemed like a London Fog.
Okay, but it was a classic 80s jacket in 1990. And he's riding this 10-speed very sloppily because he has two huge trash bags of aluminum cans on it. Why? Because Bill is out to change the world. We know that by the rockin' anthem that's playing, titled Boy, Are You Ready, which happens to be written and performed by the movie's director, Michael Paul Gerard. They played this song a lot. I'm
going to
drink a little whiskey just thinking about that song.
Magnum opus.
So in other words, not only is Bill a nerd, but he's also an environmentalist.
He's an eco warrior.
I bet he's just pulling the wool, man. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah,
has to just push it away from him.
Setting up his own roadblocks every step he takes.
As a former high school eco warrior, I can tell you, you are right.
Well, I'm not sure if Gerard wrote music for any of his other films, Rug Munchers from Mars or Bikini Med School. But if he didn't, it's a shame because Boy Are You Ready is a fucking rockin' song. After stopping by the recycling station to collect a few measly coins for all these cans he's brought, Bill meets up with his buddy Tim at school. Tim's always riding around on a skateboard playing a saxophone.
I like Tim.
He's crazy like that.
I like Tim.
Where they sit uncomfortably close to a group of cheerleaders as they just randomly do some kicks in the middle of the hallway.
Well, hold on now. If I recall correctly, the cheerleaders weren't in the hallway. Weren't they, like, just in this little... That's like a... It's, like, outside the high school.
There's
like
an outdoor pavement. It's outdoor lockers, and there's just this weird spot where they decided to
next
do some kicks.
Next to a chain link fence, they're out there doing...
But, like, in Can't Buy Me Love, where Ronnie and his friend would observe them from afar, the cheerleaders, they're literally just leaning against, like, two... Like, from me to you, just staring at them.
I'm just saying, with this budget, they've got one lens, and they're going to work it.
Now, see, as a man of science, I appreciate that. That is getting right up there on your subject and doing some studying.
Oh, they're studying. Tim, actually, Tim likes the French exchange student.
Babette,
who he describes as being what wet dreams are made of.
I couldn't tell whether she was German, Russian, or
oh,
French.
She was American, just doing a hodgepodge of...
She was New Jersey.
Yeah.
She was
Jersey Strip.
Her name was Tammy. Reminded me straight up of...
She was a Tammy.
E.J. Daly.
Oh, from Pee-wee's,
yeah,
the chick from Pee-wee's Big Adventure,
exactly,
Dottie.
Yes,
yeah, she had, in the face, yeah.
She had a very Dottie. Well, face. I don't know if Dottie had a body like that, but they didn't
hey,
show
Dottie
that.
Dottie was hot.
They didn't show that in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Well, Bill though has always had a crush on the one and only head cheerleader, Chrissy Shackler. While they're drooling over the girls, we cut to the
gymnasium.
Chrissy Shackler.
Chrissy Shackler.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
She is a real see you next Tuesday, though.
Well, we cut to the gymnasium where the boys' basketball coach is...
Wait a minute. I've got to understand. What is the medical terminology or the medical definition of a she's a really see you next Tuesday, though?
C.
C.
The letter C.
Okay.
U.
Oh.
Next Tuesday.
Oh. Oh, I got it. Very clever.
Make a note of that.
Try that one out sometime. Whenever the missus is acting up, well, you're being a real see you next Tuesday.
Hey, see you next Tuesday.
Oh, you can actually say that when you're leaving the house for a Tuesday night cigar club. Dinner was great. See you next Tuesday.
I think you're being a real see you next Tuesday. Oh wait, no, that's too obvious.
It's still better than calling her a baked potato.
Which, by the way, I did, and I was right. My wife just kind of cocked her head and goes, "What?
Oh, really? She didn't get mad then? Huh?
No, she didn't get mad. She was just like,
wait, what?
Was
you had to be here for last episode?
Oh no, I just had some questions about the context of you're like sitting on the couch cuddling. You're my little baked potato.
That was a Death Race quote from Stallone. He called his co-driver a baked potato, and we couldn't figure out exactly what the genesis of that insult was.
I had never
was.
Heard of that insult before.
Remember, gentlemen, the proof is in the potato.
The proof is in the potato.
You know, some men may think you're a cutie pie, but I just think you're a baked potato. Sucker.
It made no sense, but we got fascinated by it, which was probably because we'd been drinking for 3 hours.
Well.
Well, as the girls are doing their thing and the nerds are watching them, we cut inside the gymnasium where the coach is barking these sexually aggressive commands at the players. Move in closer, tighter, tighter. Shove it in there. I said shove it in there. Now hit the showers. We don't want to blow our wads before the big game.
And bring back fond memories to your football days?
Repressed fond memories. And by that I mean repressed memories. But it's a crazily shot scene, like up from the ground, and the guys are just like passing each other real fast.
It was the worst basketball practice I've ever seen.
It was literally the worst film basketball anything ever made, which I guess that's something. It was terrible.
I think there might have been
I was really beginning to feel like it was, you know, that whole John Goodman Revenge of the Nerds. All right, hit the showers.
Shit, we forgot to practice.
Oh, no, they're dribbling.
That would have been good.
They were all over the place.
They're dribbling their balls off.
Balls were going everywhere.
Whose balls were they? We don't know.
There may have been an A.C. Slater, Zach Morris basketball practice from Saved by the Bell that was similarly shot.
I think you are correct,
sir. I actually think the Saved by the Bell basketball scenes were far better than this.
Yeah.
Well, the jocks then hit the water fountains just at the same time as the cheerleaders do. And the big stud on campus, Tony Chinooka, peels off his shirt and walks up to Chris.
Style.
I don't have that in my notes. Tells Chrissy Shackler that he heard she broke up with her boyfriend, Brian McCullough, earlier that morning, and he'd like to spend some time with her. Sure, when, she says. 5 minutes behind the gym, Tony says, and naturally she runs off to fix her lipstick and get ready for Tony.
Oh, jeez.
Well, he is a 34-year-old bodybuilder and not a high school basketball player.
All these people, man, all those cheerleaders, Babette looks, you know, she's pushing 34 in this.
Well, Babette and the others warn her that they've all been behind the gym with Tony and try to tell her what she's in for, but he's too hunky for her to resist, so I can certainly relate to that.
Yeah, how many times did you try that one back in high school? Sure, Matt, I'll go out with you 5 minutes by the gym.
Oh, I meant I was lured behind the gymnasium by hunky basketball players. But that's,
I tried
again...
I tried to cover that over for you there.
You know what? I'm going to pour a little more whiskey here.
I think that was some of those repressed memories coming out.
But you know what? I transferred from Baylor and went to Sam Houston. And everything worked out for the best. More whiskey, Ted?
Yes, please.
You know what? I'll drink to that.
Yeah, please? More whiskey?
Sure, well, top me off.
Where was I? So in the boys' locker room...
That was wonderful. That might be the line of the night. We're not even drunk yet.
Coach introduces Bill to the team as their new towelboy.
Towelboy.
I'm sorry,
boy.
The Buckskins new towelboys. The name of the team is the Buckskins, which was the name of the street the doctor grew up on.
Are you saying there's some sort of gay analogy there?
No, I'm just saying I used to ride my bicycle to Buckskin, where you would touch me.
Which I would lure Cade behind the gym.
I didn't... on his bike ride in, and you're hearing like radio spots. Mm-hmm. The radio stuff on here and the stuff that's on the TV is the funniest thing.
No.
The movie.
That I'm going to get to that a little bit because when he drives to the basketball games, when you first notice, you must, if you're watching on Amazon Prime, let me get this out of the way. You must leave the subtitles on at all times.
Yes.
One, the audio in the film itself is terrible, so you need it to understand what people are saying. But second, they subtitle all the background chatter, including radios and TVs, and that is actually the funniest stuff in the movie.
True.
True. Keep that in mind at home.
I had to write down some lyrics myself, but we'll get to that later.
In the boys' locker room, Coach introduces, like I said, Bill to as their new towelboy. They welcome him by whipping him with towels and demanding that he pick up their dirty jocks with his teeth. Keep in mind, he volunteered for this gig.
Doesn't the coach actually say to him, take it easy on him, I don't want to get another one so quickly.
I'm tired of going out and getting you guys new towelboys.
Guys just sexually harass towelboys every other day.
Every week they have to get a new towelboy because they have sexually harassed the last one.
Well, amidst all the homoerotic mayhem in the locker room, Tony slips out.
Hey, it's just locker room talk.
It's just locker room talk. Tony's got some pussy grabbing to do himself, so he goes out behind the gym to meet Chrissy, who's been out there waiting for so long. I love this quote. You know, I'm just about on the verge of getting mad at you. How's that work?
Well, it would have been better if she had not delivered it.
Well, keep in mind, everyone's delivery in this movie is awful. No one's acted before. No one ever acted again. It is what it is. It's
you could deliver me another Murphy's.
That I can do. But he tells her to relax. One second, doctor. He tells her to relax as he spits out his gum and wraps his arms around her. It'd take a real dildo head to stand you up, baby. And besides, the sun is out, birds are chirping, and we're here together, babe. The only thing that can make it any better is if we were naked. Oh, Tony, you always know the right thing to say. And they start going at it.
Honestly, I'm a little jealous at this point because, like, really, that's all it takes?
Chrissy swoons.
He was getting really wrapped up in his notes, man.
Well,
he's a professional.
She swoons and they start making out. As they lie in the grass, she reveals that she's a virgin. Didn't see that one coming.
Didn't believe it either.
Turns out that she broke up with her ex, Brian McCullough, that morning because he decided to bone Patricia Abernathy because he couldn't bone Chrissy. Well, Tony...
And here she is under the gym because...
Well, Tony, in his infinite wisdom, concludes the best revenge she can get is bone him.
That is true, though.
And get this, she agrees.
Well, I mean, because that is true.
Who are we to argue with Tony Chinooka? I'm not going to do it. Well, luckily, Tony is a Boy Scout and he always keeps a rubber in his
sock.
I'm
just saying that spite sex is the best revenge.
I'll see you next Tuesday.
Kind of misused it, but I like it. I like it. We'll work on it. We'll work on it. You're getting there.
You got to warm into it. Tony carries a condom in his sock.
Oh, he's nothing if not aggressive.
So he slips off her panties. He's totally ignoring her when she's changed her mind and saying, Tony, don't.
So has anybody else pulled the open the condom with your teeth and then spit the...
Well, no, it's clearly a fake thing because it's like a paper. It's a, he tears it open like an envelope with his teeth. It's anybody who's ever opened a condom, it's like a bag of chips. It's really hard to... It's not an easy...
No. There's none of that.
But just then, as you know, like I said, she's begging him.
I tried to do that once.
You bit your lip, and that ended that day. Huh?
No, it's just when I gave the first yank, and then when I gave the second yank, I was like, "All right, this isn't sexy anymore."
Yeah, he was like, just, "Nope."
See,
easy joke.
Not that there's anything wrong.
No, there's anything wrong with that. Well, as soon as he's about to penetrate her, which she's saying no, she's changed her mind, but you know, nobody says no to Tony Chinooka. Bill, our hero, flings open the door and throws a big bucket of mop water right all over him. I'll kill you, cowboy, Tony yells as Chrissy runs off. So we know this isn't over by long shot between Bill and Tony Chinooka. But it turns out Tony and Chrissy's coitus interruptus is short-lived as he accompanies her home after school that day. Yaks, did I use that term? Coitus interruptus correctly.
Yes, you did. You did indeed.
How about that? Doctor, that's a medical term. I don't want to steal your thunder here. I'm just.
Yes, Mr. Cade, but don't lecture me on my coitus interruptus.
I won't. I know it's different for everybody. After charming the mom jeans off Chrissy's mom, Mrs. Shackler, Chrissy's bedroom door is barely closed when Tony throws her on the bed. He wants to do it to her like animals in the wild. And when she asks if he brought another condom, he informs her, "Hey, baby, I'm already wearing it." How does that work? Doctor?
Well,
I'm glad you're here tonight.
Technically, I guess there's nothing.
He would have to have an erection out in the car and put on the rubber and maintain that erection.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking from a safety standpoint. I guess there's nothing wrong with having the latex on for an extended period of time. But yes, when his penis went limp, unless we're assuming Tony Chinooka's penis does not go limp.
Well, we'll see later. It does.
And this is in the age of before Viagra.
Yeah, he didn't take a pill.
This is in the age of before Clarence Thomas, because you notice how his move is just to go right in and start grabbing the panties. He didn't fuck around. Yeah. Chinooka's not in this for a conversation.
No.
He's just in it for the sticking.
Hey, Chinooka could be president of the United States someday. Well, suddenly...
I think he actually is the Secretary of Defense.
My new Secretary of Labor, Tony Chinooka.
I'll fix Russia. I just told him to meet me outside behind the gym. It's your solution to everything.
Nobody says no to Tony Chinooka. Well, suddenly, just as he yanks down his acid-wash jeans, coitus interruptus part two goes down as the sexy Mrs. Shackler breaks down the bedroom door and orders him to get the hell out of her house.
Get the hell out of my house. Are you doing something with my daughter?
Again, they're all horrible actors.
Was I the only one thinking that if Chinooka was a real man, he would have just offered the mom to come in and join him?
I'm going to get really heavily into Mrs. Shackler later. you guys don't want to hear my thoughts. But no, he tries to say that he was giving Chrissy, who was choking, artificial respiration, but Miss Shackler...
With his pants off.
Mrs. Shackler didn't just fall off the turnip truck. She's not buying that crap. Well, yeah, he had to take his pants off for some reason. And he was wearing a condom for some reason.
There's also no such thing as artificial respiration.
That's... a very good point as well.
And which, that is why he is a doctor.
That's why you're a doctor. Meanwhile,
across town,
Bill's dropping off a few more bottles. This guy cannot stop recycling.
Well, he's got college to pay for, man.
Well,
by the way, when we first saw, I have to admit that when I was drunk watching this trailer and I drunkenly approved this viewing, I actually thought that this guy was Revenge of the Nerds dude, Carradine.
He's kind of a longer haired, greasier.
No, Carradine would have been much, much better.
If Carradine's parents had left him in the garage with a car running when he was a kid for like 2 days, it would be this guy.
Just long enough to do permanent damage.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
But not necessarily hammer the nails home.
Well, Bill's dropping off a few more bottles at the recycling center, but there's one bottle that no matter how many times he throws it in the dumpster, it keeps shooting back at him. And we know because it literally 60 or 70 times we see him throw this bottle in there, and it keeps coming out with his little comical music.
Amazing. It never breaks.
It never breaks.
The director or the assistant DA, do you think that four times? I mean, surely the audience hasn't.
Michael
by now,
Paul.
Right?
Michael Paul Gerard. I think we've got this. I'll say when we've got
assistant
this.
Director.
Yeah,
that was a good joke, man.
Did you guys watch the end credits? It's all made up names. Seriously, all made up names.
Yeah, one of them was Hans Job.
That was actually the name of the chick who played Babette Dubois.
Oh, man.
Key grip was Peter Gozinia.
It's actually the name I'm using at the hotel tonight. I don't know why you're laughing. You're rooming with me.
Oh.
Checking in, Mr. Gozinia.
Mr. Gozinia? Mr. Peter Gozinia?
Now I'm going to have to rewatch this movie.
Just watch it.
The guy walks up. I'm Peter Gozinia.
I reserved a room.
My name's Mr. I'm Peter Gozinia.
What are the odds of this happening? I'm so embarrassed. Well, finally, right as he's about to shatter the bottle out of frustration, he hears a tiny muffled little voice coming out from inside the bottle. Bill peers down into the neck, and he sees a tiny little leprechaun in there.
Please don't throw me away. I'm only 1,257 and a half years old. I'm too young to die.
The leprechaun pleads. Bill can't believe his four eyes. So he pockets the bottle and just takes off. No, he's like, what are you doing in there? He's, all right. So he sticks in his pocket and rides off.
I shot a text to Cade at this point, and I was like, oh, the doctor is meant for this.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't listen to any song in this movie or the leprechaun's voice without hearing the doctor's dulcet tones.
Maybe you'll get to hear some of it later.
I'll drink some whiskey to that.
We both went for the whiskey.
Hey, look, if any of us gets to the point where you look in a beer bottle and see a little leprechaun,
yeah.
Either you just keep drinking or it's time to head to the...
Oh, like y'all haven't done that before?
I wonder if it's too late to cancel my room. Well, hey, that's Peter Gazinga's problem. While all this is going on, Tony gives Chrissy a phone call to set up a new romantic encounter. This time he suggests that they fuck under the bleachers that night, but Chrissy's concerned about getting stale popcorn and chewed gum stuck to her butt cheeks for her first time.
Legitimate
Sensible?
Concern.
Legitimate
Sensible?
Concern.
I mean,
so get this.
Like Chinooka style, behind the gym, under the bleachers.
Well, get this. She says, and you know what? It's my first time. Maybe some flowers and some chocolate or something like that would be nice.
How does she know?
Who she thinks she is, Jackie Onassis?
Well, I mean, she's thinking of like, hey, a little seduction wouldn't hurt over here.
I'm just saying, it's Tony Shanuka, man. You just go
I'm
with it.
I'm just saying, as a high school nerd, I tried the chocolates. I tried the flowers. They don't want that. They want bubble gum stuck to their ass under the bleachers.
They want the Chinooka, man.
They want the Chinooka, man.
I have a feeling Tut got the Chinooka. He's still pulling stale popcorn out of his butt cheeks.
You can't prove that.
I can't not prove that. I cannot prove that.
Cody knows he was there.
Big potato.
On the bicycle ride home, the leprechaun introduces himself to Bill as Lepke Granioli Shavsheski. Which doesn't sound Irish to me.
Does not sound Irish at all.
Doesn't sound Irish at all.
Related to the coach of the Duke Blue Devils, Lepke Krzyzewski.
But his friends just call him Lepke for short, so that's what we'll call him. Although, when I was making my notes, my spell check kept changing his name to Leaky. So if I accidentally slip up and say Leaky, just go with it. Which
were,
I think would
you
be
were drinking when you were making your notes.
Which I actually think would be a funnier name for a leprechaun.
Hi, Begora, Leaky the leprechaun.
Right? Yeah. A little piss stain in his pants?
No.
He was an alcoholic.
He was an alcoholic. Recovering, supposedly.
It's not gold in me pants.
Bill asks... They spilt me Lucky Charms all over me drawers. That wasn't a bad little Irish voice I did. The more whiskey I drank, the better my Irish
You're getting luckier by the hour. What do you say to a golden shower?
Oh, dear God. I'll drink to that. I mean, Paul Gozinia will drink to that.
Peter Gozinia. It's not Paul Gozinia. That makes no sense.
Bill.
Gozinia. First name Peter. Stay with me, people.
Paul asks Lepke how he got trapped in the bottle in the first place. And Lepke explains that it's his punishment for being a drunk. There's no Biddy Ford clinics for leprechauns.
I love that. I, for some reason, that line just stuck out to me.
What y'all's...
I don't know why.
Yeah. What's y'all's punishment for being drunks? Mine's sitting here with you. Did I say it out loud?
What?
Did I say that out loud?
You just did.
I'm drunk enough to where I don't care.
Well, Lepke must grant three wishes before the spirits of the goblins who imprisoned him in the bottle will let him out. Bill naturally volunteers. Who doesn't want some wishes, right? Bill naturally.
If it was truly an Irish theme, they should have said banshees. The spirit of the banshees wouldn't let him out.
You don't like goblins used?
Nah, I mean, it's.
I don't think goblins are Irish. Trying to be too accurate over here.
I'm just talking to the guy in the authentic Irish hat. Do they all wear those and everything?
No, they don't.
Like to work and stuff?
I think that was probably the fault of the script editor, Hans Job.
Aren't banshees like crazy wild women?
Yeah, they're female spirits. They wail.
And those are Irish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Well, Bill obviously wants the wishes, so. But Lepke says there's one condition. You mustn't show me to anybody. The last thing a recovering alcoholic leprechaun needs are curious scientists. Sorry, Doc, that's his words, not mine. Examining him, or even worse, being featured on Geraldo. To you young viewers out there, Geraldo was a talk show in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, no, he's a legitimate news source. He was on Fox.
Well, no, but in the 80s and 90s when this was made...
He was embedded in Afghanistan.
He had a talk show similar to, like, today's talk shows... it was like the Ellen DeGeneres Show, but with more hardcore lesbians and
it was really bad
Nazis.
Well, see, the easiest way to explain Geraldo is he's the modern day Alex Jones. He was a laughing stock, and now suddenly he's a legit news source.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy. I don't want to get into a big Geraldo thing here, but I mean, he was basically, you know, he'd have the Klan on there on one side of the stage and black activists, and he's like Jerry Springer, but not.
He was
with,
a shock jock.
Yeah, man. He was a shock jock on TV.
That's all he was. Of course, I did tune in for the Capone's Vault.
Well, who didn't?
In one of those situations where he had skinheads and members from the Simon Wiesenthal Nazi hunter organization sitting within a few feet of each other, broke out, and he was famously
infamously smacked in the face with a chair and broke his nose, which his giant shaggy mustache soaked up all the blood immediately, and he was fine.
It is true. He did have a glorious mustache.
I believe he still does.
He does. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if he went into Al Capone's vault and they did all that digging and excavating, they opened it up, it was just the four of us in there drinking? This is good stuff. How'd you guys get in here?
It's kind of like in Spies.
I don't know, and I don't care.
It's kind of like in Spies Like Us when that crate lands and they're Aykroyd and Chase are sitting there with the boxes of crackers and some case of beer.
Geraldo's like, what do you guys have to say for yourselves? See you next Tuesday.
I will say this. I wouldn't mind drinking with Geraldo.
No, have fun with that.
No, we just play it up. He's like, this is supposed to be Al Capone's vault. There's Lucky Luciano, and I'm
a... Hey. Yeah, you're going to enjoy until he says, hey, meet me up at the gym.
No, Geraldo, not like this.
This is John Dr. Fingers Vincey.
If I'm slamming down drinks with an 80s talk show host, I'm sorry, guys. I'm going Donahue.
Donahue would be... That's not a bad choice.
I'd actually probably do a couple shots with Sally Jesse.
I was about to say, if I was drunk enough, I would do Sally Jesse.
You would do Sally Jesse?
I mean, I'd talk with her, yeah, sure.
It's not how I heard it.
Maybe Ricky Lake. I mean, you know.
Remember Morton Downey Jr.? That guy could smoke. That guy could smoke some cigarettes.
Well, so long as he introduces himself as Peter Gozinha.
I'm sitting here with Peter Gozinha of the Tuesday Night Cigar Club. Actually, I'm the host, Hans Job. enough about 80s talk shows. We could go on and on about that. We join Bill in his bedroom as he makes his first wish. He tells Lepke that he wants every country in the world to throw away their guns and bombs and start discussing how they'll work together to save the environment.
Hold on, man. I'm not Jesus Christ.
Lepke's like, pretty tall order, man. I'm like, fucking Bill Snowflake. Libtard. Give me a break.
He's against violence at all. I mean, in any form.
Well, I'll get into that.
To be
later.
Honest, that is a pretty legitimate wish.
It's a great wish.
It's
but
a good wish.
Lepke says, "Slow the fuck down. I've been in a bottle for a long time. Let's start with something small. How about some cufflinks or a new ant farm? Didn't you ask for an ant farm for Christmas?
No.
Well, I guess I have some returning to do.
You got me that last year. I told you no last year.
Well, Bill then shifts gears accordingly.
Was last year? How are those ants still alive?
Oh, you're supposed to feed them.
They ate each other.
He decides to not pick a wish with his brain, but rather his... Doctor, is it pronounced Bonner? Boner.
Boner.
His boner.
Yes, boner.
He uses boner.
Boner.
It's a hard O.
Right.
Boner.
Interestingly enough, the executive producer of this film was Richard Boner.
Dick Boner.
Yes.
I've seen some of his other...
I'm sure you have.
Bill tells Lepke that he wishes for a date with Chrissy Shackler, and Lepke immediately gets to work.
Exeter, Flexeter, Fee-Fi-Fo-Flacker, give a date with the lass, Chrissy Shackler.
Rubs his little hands together in the bottle.
Oh my God.
Real quick, wouldn't you guys have wished for more than just a date with Chrissy Shackler?
Well, our...
It sounds like she'll... First of all, she'll go out with anybody.
Our protagonist is so kindly and good.
As long as you're willing to have a rubber and willing not to screw her on top of some old chewing gum, it sounds like she'll do ya. So why not, like, ask to throw that French chick in the mix? Like, go big. Go big with your wish.
Let's have all the cheerleaders in a little no-pants breakdance.
I'm just saying.
He's too good.
He is. I guess maybe.
And this gets. Hey, pants breakdown.
That's a character choice. Bill's too good for that. He just wants a date to prove his own merit, his own worth.
Bill's a fucking putz.
Bill is a fucking putz. But guess what? All of a sudden the phone rings and it's Chrissy and she wants him to go out that night. So Bill dresses up in his best Sunday
it's
suit.
A girl.
Borrows his father's car and heads out to pick up Chrissy when she's done cheering at the Middleville Buckskin boys basketball game. Here's what you were talking about, Todd, is Bill drives. He turns on the radio. First, it's the catchy theme music, Boy, Are You Ready? But he hears that everywhere he goes, so he turns the channel. And it's the AM basketball station calling the basketball game. And the announcers are disgusted. Gameplay's been stopped. There's a condom that slipped out of one of the player's socks. And they're just going on and on. Classic Tony Chinooka. Even on the basketball court, he carries a condom in his sock.
Hey, never know when you might need to be ready.
That is true.
Boy, are you ready? Coach, you call a timeout. He'll have some time to go behind the gym. You never know.
Coach unprepared. Just called a timeout. Tony Chinooka is going behind the gym.
Tony Chinooka's taking the coach behind in the gymnasium. Nobody's safe from the chon. After getting a half-assed pep talk from Lepke in the parking lot, first of all, I'm not so sure Lepke's in recovery at this point. He seems pretty sauced.
He's in the beer bottle, and he's very tiny.
He's not in a beer bottle. Did you guys think that was a Negro Modelo bottle?
I thought it was like a Michelob.
I thought it was Negro Modelo.
It wasn't an Irish beer. It looked like a Negro.
I thought it was a Lowenbrau. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a Negro Modelo, because Negro Modelo's bottles are squat and fat on the bottom side of it.
It was not an Irish beer.
No. Lowenbrau. Yeah, I can see that.
Well, he's Lepke. Who knows what he fell
into? Who knows? That's true.
Could have been a bottled Strawberry Hill.
When Lepke hit rock bottom, who knows what he was crawling into? Well, Bill goes into the basketball auditorium. Finally, he's got some courage. He's immediately confronted by Chrissy and her MILF mother, Mrs. Shackler. Mom demands to know where Bill's going to take Chrissy, and when he innocently says, the drive-in to see a movie. Oh, hell no, you're not taking my daughter to the drive-in. I know what goes down at the drive-in.
You are correct.
So you bet she knows what goes on there. But he quickly shifts gears and says,
"How do you think Chrissy was born?
Miniature golf? Mom likes the miniature golf idea." And Chrissy's behind him, like giving him the thumbs up. Like, so, dude, Mrs. Shackler?
Come on, Mrs. Shackler.
Well, they all settle on a night of miniature golfing, but then we immediately cut to the drive-in theater where Bill is really torn up about lying to Mrs. Shackler. They turned out she made him go to the drive-in. Just imagine, he says, if we lived in a world where no one ever lied, how much better would the planet be if everyone told the truth?
Not good.
Trust me, it would not be good, especially for this group. You don't want me telling the truth.
Hey.
Well, this is a guy who's not in touch with reality. He's having conversations with a leprechaun in a beer bottle. He probably does think the world's honest.
And thanks for getting me out of the, thanks for getting me out of that little moment, by the way.
It's recorded for posterity. We'll come back to that.
The absolute last thing you guys want from me is to tell the truth. Sorry, where was I? Well, Chrissy couldn't care less. She says she lies to her hot-ass mom all the time, and she sends Bill to go get her some popcorn.
He doesn't want to hear the truth either. No truth tellers here.
My whole life is about avoiding the truth. As soon as Bill's out of the car to get the popcorn, Chrissy puts a pre-made note on the dashboard saying, "Went to the bathroom, be right back." And boom, she's in the backseat of Tony Chinooka's car.
Naturally. Naturally.
Well, no one can say that Tony Chinooka doesn't listen.
They say they want flowers. They say they want chocolate.
Don't ever say Tony doesn't listen to a woman's wants and desires. She said she wanted chocolate. She said she wanted flowers. He has a bundle of a really crude little three or four flowers you can tell he picked from his lawn, and a tiny fun-size Hershey bar like this big. "Hey, babe, you said you wanted flowers and chocolate." "Oh, Tony," she says.
It looked to me like he had handed her an already half-eaten Kit Kat. Like he broke half of it off.
I think he had taken a bite out of it. But, "Oh, Tony, you think of everything," Chrissy says.
"Oh, I hate Tony."
And before you know it, he slides her bra and panties off.
I just wish I'd known a Shackler back in high school, man. Kids, ride this bitch is easy.
I was starting to wonder, 30 minutes into a Troma team release, if we were going to see any boobage. Like, Troma movies are notorious for nudity. We do see here one quick clip of a nipple, but there's no way that nipple belongs to that girl. It was like an old lady nipple.
How do you know?
It was a close-up. They didn't show her face and the nipple together. It was just a random... nipple insert.
And also, Cherry Nipples was one of the stunt doubles.
I don't know, because she was
the on-set accountant.
She was kind of flat like...
double duty there.
She was kind of flat like Cherry or Chrissy. It was a believable nipple stand-in.
No, because later in the showers, Chrissy covers her boobs, which tells me that was not Chrissy's nipple.
Okay.
And you only watched that scene once.
I watched tonight's film, as usual, 7 times to get my detailed notes.
All right, but they had a booty shot early on. So we're at two nude scenes. Do you classify a booty shot as
Bill
a
getting
nude
dressed
scene?
For school? That's not a booty shot, dude.
I didn't
dude.
Say that.
That was sound technician Rosie Cheeks.
Rosalind. Rosalind Cheeks.
Rosalind Cheeks.
She goes by Rosie. No, there's been no butt shots. There's been nothing.
Yeah.
No, yeah, at the beginning. Well, at the very beginning, when she's having her first roll with Chinooka, he pulls the panties
that's
down
true.
And you get some ass.
You see a little bit of ass. But I was starting to think 30 minutes in, perhaps I was getting unlucky?
Doesn't work.
No, not yet. That was an accurate use, because I was like, hey, if the claim to fame with this series is TNA... And it's 30 minutes
not
in,
the series.
And I haven't seen TNA.
Troma's not putting your movie out unless it delivers some good.
At 30 minutes in, didn't we all start feeling kind of unlucky?
Yes.
Truer words have never been spoken.
I was glad I went to the liquor store and got not only scotch, but bourbon for this.
Real quick, did you internet film experts pick up on the sci-fi film playing on the screen at the drive-in? It was narrating the action, basically, with Chrissy. As Chrissy was escaping from Bill's car to go to Tony's, they were showing these gladiator princesses on screen. Like, don't let the bitch escape. She's trying to get away from the hero.
No, like, I didn't.
Was that Rug Munchers from Mars?
Gladiator Princesses, actually, was the name of the film. But, dude, they were saying shit that went along. This film has a lot of little shit like that.
No. To me, that's actually clever.
It was a nice touch in a film that so far has shown not one single nice touch.
Right.
So I picked up on it because it was stuck out like a sore thumb. Subtext? What the fuck is
and
this?
And that writer got fired right away.
Yeah.
Whoa, here. We don't want anything like that.
Would you please tell them I'm not deep enough for subtext? Well, Bill returns with a giant tub of popcorn, which he promptly stumbles and spills all over the car.
He stole that from our last show, the Death Race 2050 scene.
Mm-hmm. He spills it all over the car. He finds the note. Fucking nerd spilling the popcorn immediately. But the longer she's gone, the more suspicious Bill grows. Even Lepke looks in the bottle and thinks that something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
A Shakespeare quote.
Meanwhile, in Tony's back seat, Tony's having some serious condom issues. The first, for Casanova of his caliber, this guy's acting like he's never put on a rubber before.
Not
in his
to mention,
life.
He just had like a rubber on for like 3 hours.
Like he lost it at the basketball game.
That's true. He lost on. Well, he didn't know how to put
well,
it
first,
on.
First, he puts it on backwards the wrong way and it shoots off. Then he tries another one and it flies off on the floor. And then he's digging through the dirty. She's like, well, if you vacuumed your floorboards every once in a while, it wouldn't get so dirty. He's trying to like pull hair and shit off of it. And then, ultimately, his wiener goes soft and he can't get it up anymore. Well, this gives Bill time to walk around the sea of cars of the drive-in, yelling out, Chrissy! And I love the voices.
I will say this was funny.
The voices of the people.
Shut up!
Shut up, asshole!
You fucking shut up, motherfucker!
Fuck you, you motherfucking son of a bitch! All this just bouncing off Bill. He's oblivious. He's a fucking nerd.
Which
nothing.
Really begs the question, because the drive-in, you know, you've got your... You got the little audio thing right there. So, like, how are they hearing him, like... Unless he's just like right next to someone's door, like
no. They just see a nerd confused out in the open, and they just attack.
Nerd,
the way it should be.
Nerd,
fucking nerds, fucking nerds.
Someone who lived through that is fucked up.
Well, finally, Bill discovers Tony's car just as Chrissy's trying to get his little soldier to stand a command with the help of her hand. Bill overlooks his date giving the jock a hand job because you know what?
I like the fact that Chrissy was like, "Am I done yet?"
No.
Ring a bell,
dude. Heard that one before. that brings back some memories.
I'm just saying the research crew spared no expense on that one.
Have you started?
Well, Bill doesn't even flinch at the hand job because he's like, Chrissy, it's almost 11:30. It's time to get you home for curfew. Hey, my Bill voice isn't too bad. Kind of sounded Bill-esque, huh?
It did actually sound pretty authentic.
Yeah. Which Tony had told her
how many cans have you recycled?
Cycling baby. But Tony had told her it was only 9 because he, you know, didn't give a shit about her curfew. So she leaves with Bill and he screams out again, I'll get you for this, towel boy. Me and my soft little pecker will get you for this. He didn't say that last part, but
it's implied.
But funny if he did.
It was implied. So Bill takes Chrissy home. He tries to make small talk about what she wants to do after graduation, what her hopes and dreams are. But she's got nothing. No hopes, no dreams. She'd fit in right here with us.
That's what I was saying. Welcome to the corner of no hope, Chrissy.
Welcome, Chrissy.
When your idea is give
Chrissy,
me...
Chrissy, do you have a pair of headphones?
When your idea is...
Hey, yo!
Give me a couple of daisies you picked from your yard and a half-eaten Kit Kat and we can lay in the back seat. I think, you know, her hopes and dreams kind of flew south with the pigeons.
Well, do you have a rubber? I've been wearing one for 2 years. Back in his sexless, nerdy bedroom, Bill complains to Lepke that the wish shouldn't count as she was just using him to date Tony Chinooka. Lepke explains that romance ain't exactly his specialty these days, so Bill wishes for a Ferrari instead.
Hang on real quick. I don't get a lot of opportunities to watch other people smoke Candelas.
Yeah.
It's such a weird-looking cigar in this day and age.
It is.
It's almost like you're smoking a gimmick cigar. And when you know the history of the cigar and you know its popularity that it came from...
Yeah, there's nothing funny about it.
It's really kind of an interesting little...
But I'm looking over at you thing. And it's like you got Swamp Thing's cock in your mouth.
You meaning the Swamp Toss.
That's not funny. I quit.
It's so unusual. You just don't see them these days. What a perfect segue. How you guys liking the cigar? It's nice. The harshness has laid off some.
Yeah.
It's mellowed out. But man, I'm not picking up anything.
Not a fan over here. Not getting much out of it.
Yeah.
It's a cigar.
What does Cigar Jerk magazine say about the number 48?
Ah, it's a cigar.
Story checks out.
Should have read my gravy aficionado.
It's not bad.
I actually really like the Retro Hail's really nice. The Retro Hail's got it's got a very smooth Retro Hail on the actual exhale.
Is there any flavors?
Try it.
I'm not really have to relight it again. I've been having to do that repeatedly.
To me, I'm not really. Well, I've been smoking the bejesus out of this thing, so I haven't had any relight problems. I'm not really picking up a lot of complexity on the retro ale.
It's a very nice compared to the actual smoke. Naturally, I'm enjoying the retro ale. The retro ale's got a really nice kind of. Not spice, but just a really nice.
I'm just saying that
unique flavor to it.
I think you put this in the morning with a cup of coffee, and I think it's a good cigar to go with it. It's definitely something if you're looking for flavors and complexity, it needs some help. It's not a very complex cigar. It is a nice smoking cigar.
It's dry.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
It leaves the mouth a little dry.
Yeah. But that's why we got the nice little Murphy stout here.
We got plenty of booze to counteract that. It's not bad. It's not great. It's just having a hard time pinpointing down what it is.
Still not getting anything on the retro hell.
It's certainly the most strong Candela I've ever smoked. It does have some strength to it. At this price point, I can't recommend it. Speaking of price points, guys, might as well now gander at what this will run you.
LFD, I'm thinking probably between 9 and 10.
Yep.
It's probably going to go more.
It's a niche market, Candela's.
Yeah.
I'd probably say 8 to 9 at most.
Given that you kind of gave a hint that you wouldn't, I'm going to go with 10. I got to tell you, not a fan of this at all. I'm with Yax. It's a cigar.
I got these off our go-to retail site, Famous Smoke Shop. It was $36.99 shipped for a fiver, so that's about $7.50 a cigar.
Okay, that's not bad.
Bad at all.
It's not bad. There's
you want to smoke a green cigar, $7. Think they'll use that in their next advertising?
You just created their slogan for the next year.
If you want to smoke a green cigar, we make one of those.
Got to pay us for that.
Which
copyright 2017 Tuesday Night Cigar.
Which is interesting because I kind of want to equate maybe Candela's as the macro brews, whereas like the beer consumer for a long time, the younger folks they're lucky because they've grown up in an age of very complex, diverse beers. Cigar smokers right now, this is the heyday of cigars. There are very complex and diverse cigars out there.
Very true.
That wasn't always the case. Same way with the beers. There was like the macro brews, there was the macro cigars too. I wonder if our palates have become accustomed to that complexity and diversity, where we lose the appreciation, or we've just grown past the appreciation of Candela's.
It's funny, the doctor and I have been occasionally dipping our toes into some back episodes of Beverly Hills 90210, just for nostalgia's sake.
For research purposes.
And I caught an episode the other day where at the Peach Pit After Dark, the club they opened up behind the Peach Pit, it was like a music venue / bar. And they're having a big Super Bowl event, and the bartender, they're like, "What do you got, tonight?" And he's like, "We got shot specials, and we have all 10 microbrews." Like,
all 10 of them, like, in the world.
Like, literally every microbrew in the world, we've got them here.
This is in 1997.
All 10 of them. Now you have 10 million choices. You're lucky.
The After Dark.
I just, I, it's kind of weird because, and to me, I don't want to flex my Romacraft fanboydom, but their Candela is, it's weird. It's Candela, but it's very complex. It's a, it's got the smooth properties of Candela. Candela's got that same smoothness, the same easygoing smoke profile from cigar to cigar, but the Romacraft does have some complexity to it. And again, I was kind of wondering if that's, you know, my palate that's expanded beyond Candela's.
Let me ask you guys a question then, not to get too far off of getting lucky.
Well, we've talked about the cigar very little tonight, so...
You've talked a lot about Candela's and what that means, so I, to me, I tried a retrohale, I got a little something extra, but I, like you said, Kate, I really can't put my finger on it. Otherwise, it's basically flavorless. Now, is that properties of a Candela can go that way? Because, Kate, you said this was harsh for a Candela, and I don't get any harshness, or do you think that there's a gimmick with the green wrapper?
No, it's...
No.
Basically, what I'm saying is, what's the problem here?
If anything, it's a tell all of just how much the wrapper plays a part in your smoking experience.
Right.
I mean, Dominican filler, Nicaraguan binders, those are in every, you know, a million cigars that we love.
Right.
The addition of this Candela wrapper and the different way it's fermented and grown.
Yeah.
Really. Whereas a Connecticut broadleaf wrapper, which we love.
And keep in mind, we're not smoking a suspect manufacturer.
No, these guys are top of the hill. It's just really kind of, I always think the wrapper dictates the pace and flow of the flavors you get in a cigar. The wrapper is your quarterback. Your binder's your running back. Your filler's your receivers.
Your wrapper is your Mike Glennon.
You son of a bitch. So the Bears gave $50 million to a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. I don't see anything coming bad out of that. Osweiler style.
As the Texans.
The rapper plays a huge... This is evidence.
It's a very...
Exhibit A on why the rapper is such what it is. And I'm okay smoking a green cigar once a year for our St. Patty's Day show.
Man,
last year we did the barber pole cigar with the filthy hooligan. It was Candela mixed with a Nicaraguan leaf, and it was really nice.
Yes,
played together really good.
I've gone back to the hooligan a couple of times this year.
You actually told me you bought us one to try here tonight and compare, but I'm guessing you smoked those
all to yourself.
He showed me at his house. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to bring these so you and I can compare and contrast." I'm like, "Yeah, I'll see that again."
I was hoping you forgot about that.
Nope.
But no, it's true. It's
you fucking baked potato.
A lot of your Candela profiles, Doctor, was lighter, okay. More wheaty.
No,
more
well, they're
grassy.
Their telltale taste is grassy.
Yeah,
it tastes like
it. There's
it's got a grassy.
There's literally some Candelas that will transport you to the middle of the Great Plains.
Okay.
Or mowing your parents' lawn as a teenager.
Or mowing your parents. Which I did, and these things don't sound all that appealing.
No, they're not.
What would I be doing when I'm in there on the Great Plains?
Watching the buffalo run.
I don't know if I want to do that.
Well, once a year you'll do it, damn it. But yeah, it's a unusual cigar. And right now, it's really not giving me anything that makes me want to smoke it again. Agreed?
If somebody gave it to me, I would not turn it down.
That doesn't count. Somebody could give you anything, you'll smoke it.
I think we drank a beer once. We were like, if someone gave me a 12-pack of it and I was just sitting there, that's not an endorsement.
Well, since it's free... I mean...
Would you have sex with this woman? Well, if she showed up and spread her legs and I was too tired to leave the room and...
If Tony gave me that fun-size Snickers and the gymnasium was right there, I guess I'd...
Coach was standing over there giving specific instruction throughout...
Penetrate! We gotta get penetration! Push it all the way through! Push it all the way through! Hard! Don't be afraid to be rough! God, that coach had some issues, huh?
I think they were really just sort of like slapping... other movies, like just cut scenes together?
I don't know. This was a telltale characteristic of script supervisor Richard Bagg.
I'm just trying to figure out
Dick
how...
Dick Bagg, he does good work.
I'm just trying to figure out...
You guys nuts.
I'm just trying to figure out how I contact the LFD rep and be like, hey, we reviewed your cigar.
They're welcome to find us on their own time.
So Bill wishes for a Ferrari instead as something more easy for Lepke to solve.
Who doesn't want a Ferrari?
Exeter, Flexeter, Nightside, so starry, make there appear a bright red Ferrari.
Well, guess what? Bill runs outside, and there is a brand new car out there.
And it is red.
Wow.
And it is red.
Well, it's more of a maroon.
Well, it's completely rusted out. It's a Pinto.
It is a Pinto.
But Lepke got the color right. And Bill, being the good soul that he is both thankful and gracious for the new car. And, you know, that's one wish down, two to go.
Well, he could have actually said, you know what? It's not a Ferrari. You get my wish wrong.
But that's Bill, and he's not like us. He's a good person.
I'm starting to get a little tired of Bill.
I agree.
Just now?
I agree. If you're going,
I thought you could say he's not like us because he's no fun.
That's true.
Well, that's true.
Well,
how long has he been in high school?
Oh, dude, if I was Bill and I was getting up in that house recycling those cans.
I mean, is Bill a freshman?
Senior.
A senior?
Yeah.
I can't relate to Bill. I'm having a difficult time understanding how Bill...
The sad thing is, Tut's over there like, I can totally relate to Bill.
No, he wasn't playing D&D. I can't relate to this dude at all.
You know what
all.
He did when he wasn't doing whatever it is he does in this movie.
He wasn't collecting
He did
cans.
Have an unusually amount of stuffed animals in his room. Did you notice that?
Yes, but he also had an impressive hat collection above his bed. What kid didn't have that?
That is true.
Cade?
Look at you.
I had no hats.
That's the irony. When I grew up, I was like, I'm going to have hats, damn it. Now look at you. You're king of the hats.
Well, you only need one hat.
It was a very realistic-looking teenager's bedroom. I look for that in movies, because I made a movie once, graduation day, and our location got pulled from us at the last minute, so I had to give this dude, living at his parents' house, a quick bedroom, and it looked it looked like a hotel room. Like, it was nothing...
But he wasn't a teenager.
No, but it looked... it didn't look lived in. It didn't look like anything like a kid, a young guy would live in. So I did... I'll give... What was the set designer's name in this?
Hugh Jazz.
Hugh Jazz. Wait a minute. Well, the next morning at school, Tony slams Bill to the ground immediately and warns him that if Bill doesn't take Chrissy out again that night and drop her off at his house, Tony's going to ram his tennis racket so far up Bill's ass, he'll look like a human shish kebab. Well, unfortunately for Tony, Bill is carrying a hidden beer bottle in his pocket at school, me style, and there's a leprechaun named Lepke in there who doesn't like what he's hearing. Doctor? What does Lepke say?
I'm sorry, but I thought this one came into a... I thought this one happened later when...
This is the Exeter Flexeter Fee-Fi-Fo Flacket. Give him a taste of his own tennis racket.
So, but I thought that happened later.
No,
This is when Tony is beating Bill with his tennis racket.
And he,
my apologies, sir. I'm sorry. Exeter Flexeter Fee-Fi-Fo Flacket. Give him a taste of his own tennis racket.
He's so much better than me.
Sorry, I dropped the ball. Nope. I apologize.
You dropped the tennis ball? No. Well, we then get to watch Tony hit himself in the head with the tennis racket a million times.
Oh, God.
Hit himself in the ass with it. Literally, for like 5 minutes, we see Tony beating himself. Dude, it's pure zapped. It's pure zapped again humor. Yeah. I love it. I love that kind of stuff. Bill, however, doesn't love it, as he's opposed to violence of any kind whatsoever. But he reasons that, you know what, it's better than getting the racket shoved up my ass.
Really?
Speaking of which...
I don't want violence, but I don't want a racket up my... Yo, shoot him his ass!
Well, speaking of which, once Bill runs off to class, Lepke goes ahead and makes Tony shove the racket up his own ass.
That's good.
as an unconscious Tony's carried off on a stretcher by some paramedics
his
with
eyes
the,
are open.
With the racket still
clearly holding it between his thighs.
Clearly.
The racket is
clearly
lodged deep within his butt cheeks.
No, it is not. He's holding it between his thighs. It doesn't even look right. I mean, surely there was someone on set.
Yeah, but it was their tennis racket. They didn't want to cut the handle off.
There was someone on set. Peter goes in you.
Well, Peter dropped the ball. I think we can all agree on that.
Oh.
Peter had a hard job. You guys love coming down on Peter.
I don't know. I thought the scene was flaccid at best.
I'm beginning to think Gerard Depardieu's humor is just catching on.
It's Michael Gerard Depardieu.
Okay.
Dummy. Oh, look, as he's getting wheeled off by the paramedics, Chrissy tracks down Bill to apologize for using him the night before. Real quick, doctor, what medical procedure would be used to remove the tennis racket from Tony Chinooka's ass?
I'm glad you asked that question, Mr. Cade. I was never really proficient in proctology, but in this case,
on an amateur level.
Well, on a professional level, on an amateur level, I'm quite familiar with it. In this case, you would do what is known as the grab and pull.
Mm.
You can offer Tony Chinooka a mandibular restraint. Kind of like, you know, when they give Arnold the shot in Running Man, they put that block in his mouth so that he doesn't, you know, break his teeth.
A couple of shots of muscle relaxer in his butt.
Doctor,
You could give him something to bite down on, but then you just do the grab and pull.
Doctor, would you say that the tennis racket got there by accident?
I would certainly say no.
Would you say that he'll have any long-term lasting...
My God, Mr. K, the long-term effects of having a tennis handle up one's ass. I mean, just think of every nerve fiber in his anal tissues must be on fire.
That's what I was thinking.
Goodness gracious me, the pain he must be in.
Will he ever sit down naturally again?
I'm afraid it's far too early to tell.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Thank you, Doctor. Fascinating stuff.
You're welcome. Always here for you.
Well, get this. Chrissy likes Bill now. So much so that they go on that miniature golf date after school.
You think it's like everything that happens to a drunk? Lepke's an alkie, so he was going to set Bill up with Chrissy. It just took a very, very long time to develop.
Yeah, it's like Tut when he asked me to get him something. Like on a Tuesday night, I'm like, yeah.
I'll get it on Sunday.
I'll email you tomorrow. And then it's Thursday. And then
Lepke's coming around just at his own drunken pace.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of Lepke in all of us.
Mincy, when am I going to get those next few pages of Barting Academy?
It was funny when you said Lepke's an alky. I thought you said Lepke's balky. And I was like, yeah.
He's got a little Bartok and Moose in him. While they're playing golf in a tender, fun montage, we get to listen to another amazing song by director.
By the way, it's so bad having the Murphy Stout in one glass and the Bushmills in the next
glass.
You want
to mix them?
I'm confused.
Can we just pour the whiskey into the beer? We could. Is that something?
You might want to after you hear this song.
It's called An Irish Honeymoon.
You might want to after you
Kentucky
hear the song.
Lawnmower.
Well, Doctor, this song titled Hole in One is another director original.
This guy seems to have only one speed.
This song did kind of reach out to me a little bit.
Hole in One?
I think I agree with you, man.
Your favorite song, Todd, on the soundtrack?
I think so.
Would like to hear some of it?
I would love to, because I think this is the point where I texted Cade and said, oh yeah, doctors all this.
Todd, could you pause the music for us? Mm. I got a feeling something special is about to happen.
When you feel like going out and having some fun, you feel like making a hole in one. Your heart makes a hole in one. Your heart makes a hole in one. You feel your whole life has just begun. Your heart makes a hole in one.
Beautiful.
Dude, that was power ballad.
Thank you, Doctor.
Didn't go into too much there, because there's more later
on. Oh, they play the song of...
Well, no, there's some other stuff later on.
50 more times.
Your heart makes a hole in one.
Two things. Hole in one is serving two purposes. It's a golf analogy. They're playing miniature golf. but your heart really only gets one chance to make a hole in one, and his lyrics convey that beautifully. My second point, did you guys see that one hole they played on that looked like a giant cock and balls? Like, you hit it down that thing, and there's like these two big round nuts at the bottom? Did you guys see that?
Yes. We all saw it.
What golf course is that?
Well, location scout Dan Cockenballs actually.
I got our place.
What is it? Wait, we made a movie on a miniature golf course that had a giant dick-shaped thing. In the...
Well, if you remember, Harold P. Nuts was the location scout. Harry P. Nuts. Big H.
Harry D's Nuts?
We used to call him Big H. Well, guess what? As the song's lyrics tell us, these kids' hearts have hit a hole in one. They're talking about things other than condoms and hand jobs. They're dropping coins into the wishing well. They're having some good old-fashioned wholesome fun.
I actually made a hole in one once on a golf course.
He did. The doctor did make a hole in one. Yeah, he's got a little trophy.
Yes.
He hit it through the windmill.
Hit it through the windmill, off the red bunker in the back, and right in that motherfucker.
Chrissy was over there giving a guy a handy.
Your heart makes a hole in
one. I bounced it off Chrissy's hand job.
Bounced off Chrissy's hand.
No, he actually did make a hole in one.
Hit Peter Gozini in the back of his heel and right in that hole.
But you can tell Chrissy's actually appreciating Bill's kind of chivalrous and gentlemanly nature. Some more of this. Even if he is a fucking nerd.
He's denigrating my people.
So much so, she rewards him at the end of the night with a kiss on the cheek. Well, no, he kisses her on the cheek. She comes in and kisses him on the mouth, to which he instantly spooges all over her face. That actually didn't happen.
Some rug munchers from Mars.
She just kisses him, and that's the end of it. This is a trauma movie, though. That's what should have happened. That's his first kiss. He should have just...
Ain't playing D&D no more.
I'm sorry, it's a trauma movie. He should have... Your first kiss, you admit some things.
I gotta say, again, you know, tears. Hearing all this stuff about the iconic trauma tropes, I'm getting none of it from this movie.
Well, keep in mind, they did not produce this movie. They distributed this movie.
Oh.
There's nothing iconic about trauma.
They didn't make it. No. They didn't make the movie. They just distributed it.
Wow, so that's got to be awesome when you're looking back at the 20th anniversary of it, and then the trauma guys are just shitting all over it.
Oh, he totally shits all over it. Like, I'd say the director's name, but you don't care. And you know what? I'm not going to talk about the movie because you're not actually going to watch this piece of shit. Dude, he totally slammed the whole damn movie.
Even throws out like a three first name instead of Michael Pollager. This was made by Lawrence Tillerson Taylor or some fucking thing.
Who cares?
Well, what's funny is I thought they were being self-deprecating through all that.
No,
think they were
just deprecating.
No. They were just defecating. It was basically like, all over it.
I'm fairly certain he found it on the shelf behind him. Like, what is this?
Look, nobody else would put this piece of shit movie out. Troma did it, but it comes with a cost.
Wow.
Yeah. Lloyd can be quite brutal in his showmanship. Well, just as Bill's about to fire up the Pinto and drive home, Tony Chinooka slowly cruises by in his Mustang 5.0 and flips him the bird. Fuck you, cowboy!
5.0.
And he yells before speeding off. Bill doesn't feel like Chrissy's safe at home alone with Tony Chinooka lurking around the streets, so he kind of casually mutters that, you know what, I'd like to be a cat. So I could sneak into her house and just keep an eye on things, doctor style.
Exeter, flexeter, boom, ditty, dat. Turn my friend Bill into a putty tat.
Lepke takes that as a sign, and all of a sudden you see the London fog jacket crumpled on the driver's seat and a little kitty cat in it. He made Bill into a fucking cat.
Be fair, Cade. In high school, I wouldn't be turning into the cat. I'd be the one lurking in the streets.
You turn into Tony's condom. That'd be your wish. Put me in Tony's sock. I can do this.
Exeter, flexeter. Tic-tac-talk. Turn me friend Doc into Tony's condom cock. I fucked that one up. I had good ones prepared.
Still laughing. This is good. Well, that's two wishes down now because he got his wish. Inside the house, Chrissy's watching a nature special on reproduction on the TV that starts out innocently enough with a flower getting pollinated before it abruptly cuts to two dogs fucking... And as the British narrator describes, then we later see giraffes deep-throating, a pair of jackals jacking each other. This is his word, the narrator.
Yo, Two jackals
jacking each other off. A deer trying to blow itself. A rhinoceros engaged in water sports.
It's just crazy. Like, it's funny. The funniest stuff in this is the little stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you would catch it if you weren't watching the subtitles.
Right. Oh, no, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So Bill the cat makes
look at that jackal. It's doing what jackals do best.
Jack each other off.
Jacking off. Let's get closer.
Well, Bill scratches at the door, so Chrissy comes and lets him in. Like, who does that? A weird cat at your door? Tut.
Well, we're not going to
get into that.
Just keep
So she picks him up and puts him on the couch with her and starts petting him. And you know what? As a cat, he starts really getting into it because he's a fucking nerd. The National Geographic special. Now he's the worst kind of nerd, a cat nerd.
Cats.
You take that back.
But you know who's not a nerd? Tony Chinooka. Before we know it, Tony's ringing the doorbell, making his way to the couch. Chrissy tells Tony she really likes Bill. What, does he have a really big schlong or something?
Feeling threatened.
And she explains that Bill is kind and shows her respect, to which Tony says, respect? What kind of bullshit is that?
That was the funniest line in the movie.
Respect? What kind of bullshit is that?
Tony apologizes then. He shifts gears. He apologizes for coming on so strong so fast. But he explains she's such a smoking hot baby, just can't control himself. In fact, when he was at the hospital earlier getting the tennis racket removed from his ass, all he could think about was her. I thought that was really sweet.
Well, that was sweet.
Do they make a Hallmark card for that?
Probably.
Dearest love,
when I had the tennis racket removed from my anus,
I thought of you.
Let's do it.
Your love made a hole in one.
Your heart makes a hole in one.
That tennis racket made a hole in one.
The tennis racket made a hole in Tony. Your heart makes a hole in one.
Well, here's what's interesting, boys. Somewhat shockingly, Chrissy tells Tony that not only does she like Bill after this little miniature golf date, but if Bill were to ask her to go steady with him, she'd say yes. This obviously angers Tony as he stands up and tells her, nobody talks to Tony Chinooka like that. He tries to wrap his beefy arms around her, but Chrissy pushes him towards the door, begging him to leave.
Nobody.
You want to play hard to get, bitch? We're seeing an ugly side of Tony now. Tony yells,
I'm willing to throw away my football scholarship to Baylor for this.
No, he'll still get that scholarship. It's clear now he has zero intentions.
Wait till Coach Bryles hears about this.
He has zero intentions of leaving this house.
He'd be the only one to throw a Baylor chip
without going anywhere. In fact, he throws her down on the couch and tells her, she's just like a sweet little doe strutting her stuff through the forest, waving her little white tail around. I guess maybe as they were on the couch, he was halfway watching the special. He like picked up some of the nature stuff.
You're just like the little doe, waving your white tail around.
That narrator is really good at his job. It's in your mind.
It's sublimity worked on Tony. He's using deer references for raping her. And just as he's about to bang her on a soft bed of moss... Like, there's no... That's his words, not mine. He's like, I'm going to bang you on a soft bed of moss like little animals like it. She's like, what the fuck? All of a sudden, Bill the cat finally grows a pair of balls and jumps on his back and starts clawing at him. And as soon as that happens, Mrs. Shackler... Well, first of all, Bill jumps on him and starts attacking him. I thought Bill hated violence in all shapes and forms.
That is true.
Now he's the ultimate bad nerd, a cat-loving, hypocritical nerd. Fuck him.
But he jumped on his back. Why didn't he jump on his face?
Because he's Bill.
Fucking Bill.
Well, regardless, the smoking hot Mrs. Shackler shows up from her hot date, whatever she was doing. I think we know what she was doing.
Would have been funny if she walked in with that guy Rock from Can't Find Me Love.
hey, baby.
I'll take care of Big Sister.
Dude, that would be awesome.
That would be so, hey.
Just got done taking care of Big Sister.
Where's the hot tub?
when we get rid of this guy so we can get to the hot tub?
Well, she sees what's going on, and Chrissy runs over to her mom. Her mom knows hot and steamy when it's done right, and this is not being done right.
Whoa.
She's like, he tried to rape me, and she's like, I'm on the phone to the cops right now. I didn't see that coming.
Damn.
So she calls the cops.
The next morning, Bill goes to pick up Chrissy for school, but guess what? The pinto won't start. Fucking Lepke. So he bicycles over to her house. Needs to say she's used to riding in a car, and she voices her displeasure.
See you next Tuesday.
I guess I have to get my old bike out from when I was a kid, but the bicycle seat doesn't fit right. He's like, hey, no worries, Chrissy. I've got a wrench. I can adjust your seat. She's like, all right, I'll go get my book bag. She goes inside. He realizes that his wrench isn't big enough, tut style.
No, so, it's too big.
Oh, his wrench is too big.
Tut style.
Kate style.
Exeter, flexeter, me, my, mo, meanier. Make the wrench just a wee bit teenier.
Lepke tries to help make the wrench a little bit smaller.
But he's got a drinking problem.
And but he's clearly still drinking. Abracadabra, both the wrench and Bill shrink. Luckily for the now micro-sized Bill, like Ant-Man, like very small, he lands on Chrissy's bicycle seat. And when she comes out and doesn't find him, she doesn't want to be late for school.
Who
so she
says we don't review Marvel movies?
We'll get to that later. She jumps on the seat and rides to school. Cue another instant classic song titled "We Can't Get Much Closer."
Can't get much closer.
Could we? Doctor, I really want to hear your rendition of this.
Explain what's going on first.
Well, as she's riding to school, Bill gets tossed around a cheesy as all hell set design. It's basically two tan colored bed sheets with some giant pubic hairs dangling
like
around.
Ropes.
Well, they look like those
giant black.
They look like those swimming pool noodles that someone spray painted black, or like a big vacuum hose. But essentially, it's supposed to be him inside her, on the outskirts of her vagina. And he's getting jumbled around as she rides off. And we hear,
we can't get much closer. We can't get much closer. We can't get much closer than this.
They can't get much closer than that. Thank you, Doctor. It's a rocking song, though. It's really good.
It is.
As she's riding to school, and he's getting he's just getting tossed around in this cheesy fake vagina.
No, it's
we hear their teacher. She's late for class, but we hear the teacher talking about the first exploration of the Grand Canyon. And we cut to our boy Bill getting beat in the face with more pubes as he goes deeper and deeper into her crotch.
He's trying to climb up out of
that. He's trying to climb. I don't know why he's fighting
it
so bad.
We can't get much closer than this.
Well, once she's finally seated in class, Chrissy can't help but start moaning, even though it's clearly not her moaning. They funneled that in some outside source. The ADR in this, the dialogue recording, is terrible.
Oh, jeez.
Bill climbs his way up her nether regions as the teacher, Mr. Peterson, who could be David Crosby's less talented, slimmer brother.
Mr. Peterson?
didn't he look like David Crosby?
Yes.
Just kind of like everybody in this movie, like, but dumber.
Either that or like.
Right, looks like.
Either that or like Gallagher after a bender.
He looked like Gallagher. Like, if you know how Gallagher had that brother that tried to copy his act? If they had a third brother who never really found his way, this would be that guy.
Gallagher was a comedian from the 80s.
Well, this teacher, Mr. Peterson, talks about groundbreaking explorers who discovered a great subterranean waterfall. Oh, this is such good stuff. As, Yax, real quick, did I use the term nether regions correctly?
You did. You did indeed.
Fucking A. Well, it all builds to a climax with Mr. Peterson screaming about raging rivers flooding the plains as Bill holds on to Chrissy's pubes for dear life. Because she's in the middle of a full-blown huge orgasm. Although no one sitting around her in the class acknowledges any of this.
Her,
they're just sitting there, and she's moaning and grinding, and poor Bill's just like holding on for dear life to this giant pube.
We can't get much closer than this!
She's groaning. She's convulsing. No, don't ever stop. Yax, did I use the term convulsing correctly?
You did, indeed.
Don't be afraid to tell me if I'm wrong.
I won't.
Well, we're exactly at the 1 hour mark now, fellas. Two-thirds of the way through the fucking movie, and finally, we find ourselves in the girls' locker room for a change.
Finally!
As the rockin' number Fits Like a Glove fires up, the cheerleaders all strip down and start soaping up.
Hello, Babette.
An hour into this thing, we're finally getting somewhere.
but we get everything.
We do. Well, it's awesome for us watching. It's a slippery descent into a hellish nightmare for Bill as he struggles to cling on to Chrissy's slick pubes.
In the words of Curtis Armstrong, we've got bush.
These girls all have bush. We see it. We see their butt cheeks. We see their most of their tops.
I didn't realize when I was watching them, though, that we never saw Chrissy.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, that's thanks to key lighting technician Harry Bush.
Harold.
Harold Bush.
Harold Bush.
Harold B. Ush.
Harold B. Ush.
He's good. He's good. Well, he's holding on for dear life, because as she gets wet, it's harder and harder for him to hold on to her pubic hairs. Until he finally slides down onto the shower floor, for which they clearly just shoved him in a swimming pool.
They totally did.
It's a huge Florida pool.
He thought it was above ground pool.
Yes.
Blue floors.
He's not even
He's flapping around. And he and Lepke are struggling not to get sucked down the drain. Then, as they start soaping up, Bill starts getting like consumed with huge suds. Big giant soap bubbles are coming at him. Between the swimming pool and the cheesy fake vagina, it's kind of like watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You know how they did all the that kind of stuff? If that movie had like a production budget of $10. I don't remember a giant hairy cooter in that film. Do you guys? No. It's been a while. I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know. Did Rick Moranis ever?
No.
Whatever your actor name is, what was challenging about this role, the shoot? Well, you know, we spent 2 days in a swimming pool, the wet scenes. It was tough to actually, you know, go through
it. What's that movie, The Making of Apocalypse Now? Just the hell they went through for 9 months in Vietnam. And
it was, what was the making of the Mark Wahlberg sailor, where they were fishermen, where they like spent
the perfect storm.
They spent like 2 months in a wet tank, and it was like, oh, they were just splashing you with water all the time.
So and so actor plays Bill Higgins. It was hell. It was hell on earth.
They were shooting me with these styrofoam pubes. It was
Finally, just in the nick of time, Lepke reverses the spell. And next thing you know, Chrissy's getting dressed at her locker, and the full-size wrench and Bill's thick nerd glasses appear in her panties. Of course, Chrissy is Chrissy, so that doesn't really spark any kind of questions in her mind.
No.
Huh?
What's this? All right. Put it in my locker.
She's an idiot.
Meanwhile, Babette.
Meanwhile, in the locker, Babette, the French exchange student, is still showering. Bill shows up under the shower fully clothed, and she looks up and sees him and screams bloody murder. There's a boy in the locker room. Been there, done that. And we cut to the school principal taking way too much pleasure in spanking a bent-over Bill with a giant wooden paddle. He demands that Bill tell him what he was planning on doing in the girl's shower with that beer bottle. That's kind of weird, right?
You were going to drink it, weren't you?
I was thinking something else, like, what are you going to do with that beer bottle and those girls? Because he carries that thing with him. It's like Bob Dole's pencil.
I mean, wouldn't you just assume that he had a beer bottle he was drinking? He was drunk.
Well, he says, Bill swears, I don't drink, it destroys brain cells. Lying fucking nerd. And that the,
No, I'm pretty sure that's accurate. I was a genius before I met you guys.
No, really, would you say my brain cells are shot?
Alcohol destroyed my life. I'm only 23 years old.
He says the bottle is simply his lucky charm. He takes it everywhere. Liar! Principal Wheeler screams as he spanks him some more.
I'm just saying the cops don't believe that line for shit.
You guys ever get spanked as a kid, as a student?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You had a teacher spank you?
Yeah. With that paddle.
Oh, good heavens, no.
Coach Kearns,
we went to the same schools you guys did.
Not elementary school.
Yeah, not elementary. I got spanked in elementary.
Fifth grade, man. Coach Kearns.
The paddle?
Yeah.
With the paddle.
That's gay.
Dude, can you imagine me going home and telling Karen Mency that some teacher hit me with a paddle? She would have gone up there and beat the living shit out of every teacher, administrator, and student in the school.
Really? Because you know what my dad did? You know the rules.
He sent him some flowers.
You get spanked at school, you get spanked here.
My dad sent that teacher a bite-sized Hershey bar and a couple flowers.
I think
said
you did.
We should talk about this behind the gym.
God. I've never been spanked my whole life. It's all coming together, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. When I was little, we lived in a two-story house up in Ohio. And the one time my mom tried to spank me. You know when you're a kid and you climb the stairs, you go like all fours to run up the stairs? She was chasing me. I'd done something really bad. And I went to the top and I stopped. And she was right behind me. And I kicked her down the stairs.
Then he became Damien.
She never tried that again.
And it all turned up roses.
You can't get much closer.
You can't get much closer. You can't get much closer than this.
Anyway, enough about weird gay punishment. Sorry about that, guys. You still remember it, I guess.
Exeter, Flexeter, meanwhile, yeah, Miney. Change the course of the rod that is striking Bill's hiney.
Lepke wasn't going to stand for Bill getting beat, so all of a sudden he makes the principal turn the paddle on himself, and he clocks him in the head, and he knocks himself out. Just like that, Principal Wheeler smacks him in the head, and he is not going to bother Bill anymore.
Why is it when he does those things that, like, the wishes turn out true?
And those aren't real wishes, because Bill didn't ask for them.
That's what
I'm saying. Young Paul didn't ask for them.
Well, that's the whole genie in a bottle crux, man. If you find a genie in the bottle and he grants you three wishes...
So anytime he wishes for somebody to, like, be beaten senseless by something they're holding, the wishes come true.
Well, again, Lepke is Irish, a drinker. And he is Irish.
Lepke is an alcoholic.
Yeah,
there's a trend starting here.
Well, this really bums out Bill. As you know, he's a fragile nerd who's opposed to violence. I mean, he doesn't like seeing the principal. Even though he's beating his ass, he doesn't want to see the principal hit himself.
Hey, he's just doing his job.
As he's waddling around campus in mental and physical discomfort, he comes across Chrissy, who asks him to sit down and explain himself, but he explains, much like Tony the tennis racket Chinooka, I can't be sitting for a while. I just came from the principal's office. After that morning shenanigans, Chrissy's had it with Bill. First he stood her up going to school, then he somehow made his wrench and glasses appear in her panties, then he finally appeared in the shower with Babette, the French exchange student. It's just all too much. He's too immature for her. Bill pleads with her to reconsider. He's loved her his entire life. In fact, all 4 years of high school, he's gone to every sporting event. He hates sports, but he went just to see her cheer.
Personally, I'm taking on Babette.
She's still not buying it, but just then, Babette herself walks up and apologizes profusely to Tony, to Bill. Bill, I'm so sorry. If I knew it was you in the shower,
I'm so sorry.
I would never have screamed. I was just so startled. Guess what? Chrissy sees Babette showing interest, and all of a sudden, Bill, I think we should get serious. I think we should go steady.
See you next Tuesday.
You know what, Chrissy? I will see you next Tuesday. Good call, doctor. She would have never screamed out. Babette's still there. She says she wished she'd make it up to him. She's like, you know, meet me later. I'll shove my titties in your, my French titties in your face.
That was obviously not said, but it was.
I was just testing to see
if
you guys.
Implied. It was implied.
I thought maybe you guys had bailed.
Watching at this point.
I thought maybe you guys had bailed at this point. I was testing.
Any scene with Babette, I'm there.
I was watching, and I concur.
I still agree with Todd.
She looks too much like EJ Daly. I'm all over that.
She was Tammy from Jersey.
Good accent job, though.
It was an accent.
Well, no, when you consider what she really sounded like. Hey, Bill, you want to take me down to bowling lanes? No, we need you to be French.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'll try it. If Peter goes in, you says so.
Well, the sign of competition leads Chrissy to have major change of heart. She demands Bill commit to her and go steady. As luck would have it... See what I did there? Luck would have it. Bill already was going to ask her to go steady that day, so he happens to have a going steady ring ready for her in her pocket.
The promise ring.
Well, because
man.
He heard it as when he was a cat.
Where'd you get this thing? Out of a gumball machine? The gracious and grateful Chrissy says.
You know what? Fuck you. I'm going with Babette.
See you next Tuesday, Chrissy.
See you next Tuesday, Chrissy. I'm going with Babette.
He explains he's on a limited budget.
This is where Can't Buy Me Love got
he's
it
only
right.
getting like right. 10 cents when per five bags of
hold on, actually, Tut, it's funny you say that. This is what I want to talk about right now. The scene at the beginning where Bill and Tim were watching the cheerleaders remind me of Can't Buy Me Love, but there's actually a lot of little moments in here that remind me of Can't Buy Me Love. You've got the... There are a lot of parallels. The good-natured nerd and the cheerleader who doesn't want to be with him until he's suddenly popular.
Only Chrissy's kind of like Cindy Mancini in Can't Buy Me Love. If she sniffed a lot of paint, she's kind of not really there. And Bill's kind of like Ronald McDonald if
he had fallen on his head.
Dropped on his head purposely many times by his parents as an infant.
But there are a lot of similarities. Only it's like you liked Cindy Mancini, you hate this chick. You kind of rooted for Ronald, and you really just want to put a bullet in this dude's head. Am I right?
I'm just saying I would have ended up with
that. Wait, putting a bullet in his head was an option?
That's what I wished for in my beer bottle as I was watching it.
Actually, I was...
Exeter, Flexeter!
Exeter, Flexeter, fee-fi-fo-fum, hand me a loaded gun!
Well, in a surprising sequence that I wasn't expecting, we cut now to the police station, which is clearly just like a back room of some restaurant or something, where two detectives are striking a deal with Tony Chinooka. He claims that Bill's a drug dealer because who walks around talking to a beer bottle all the time? And get this, dude just bought a new car. It's a Pinto, but still.
The detectives, Richard Sack and Ron Mexico.
How's a broke-ass boy... for a new Pinto. Well, the idiot cop...
Is giving them away?
It's easy. He just took a Glad bag of soda cans down to the car dealership.
I love... These guys are like Tubbs and Chibs.
No, Nubs.
Nubs.
Nubs and Fockett.
Nubs and Fockett.
They're supposed to be like Crockett and Tubbs, but like it's Fockett and Nubs.
After a 53-day bender.
I'm going to start calling you guys Fockett and Nubs.
You can just fuck it yourself.
Well, the idiot cops see some logic in what Chinook's saying, and they tell them,
I love this line.
If his lead pans out and Bill's a drug dealer, they'll drop the rape charge down to something way more chicken shit, like Indecent Proposal.
Rape exposure.
Cool. I'm sorry, Indecent Proposal. This is a Demi Moore film, which I'm pretty sure is not a crime. Otherwise, the doctor's in big trouble.
Oh, I've made many an indecent proposal.
You made a couple earlier tonight.
I went to make some more.
But no, I love the... You know what? We'll drop the rape charge to something a little less chicken shit.
Tailgating. I propose we all do some indecent proposing.
What's the Rodney Dangerfield line? Oh, I love my lawyer. He got my charge down to tailgating.
Well... Again, those were their words, not mine. I want to clarify that. So they head right over to Bill's house in their beat-up El Camino.
Exeter, Flexeter, fee-fi-fo-furfy. Why don't you hand me another can of Murphy?
Must get Murphy. Can't fight the charms.
There's no Betty Ford clinic for leprechauns, man.
What's the Betty Ford for podcasters?
They sure do need one, goddammit.
We can't because we'll lose the one demographic we're excelling in.
Drunks.
Exactly. And long-haul truckers.
They love us. They go over to his Bill's mom's house in their El Camino. They couldn't even give him a cop car. Or just don't show their car. But no, they're riding around this El Camino.
Well, it's undercover.
It's undercover.
No one would ever suspect the cops of an El Camino.
And she tells them that they're like, "Where'd your son get the car?" Oh, he said he won it in the Irish sweepstakes.
Uh huh.
The Irish sweepstakes.
Hey, these guys are pros. They're not buying that story. That's something I totally would have used on my mom.
With his like rolled up.
Matt, I found that bottle of Irish whiskey in your bedroom. Where'd you get that? The Irish sweepstakes.
Oh. You know, if we heard a little Jan Hammer in the background, I might believe these guys.
It's got Ed McMahon's picture on the cover.
Mom, remember when you chased me up the stairs and I kicked you in the face? Keep that in mind. The Irish whiskey stays.
You're wrong. Spare the rod.
I'm a different man now.
Spare the rod.
As an internet beer celebrity, I've learned the error of my ways. We then cut to another montage. Imagine that. This time set to a very slow acoustic ballad, Love Changes Everything.
It's a montage.
Once again, written and performed by director Michael Paul Gerard. Mm.
I'd like to hear some of it?
I would love to.
Oh, good God. I got to do this again.
Give our listeners, you got to hit that one button again.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could, like.
Just hit pause. Love Changes Everything.
Love Changes Everything. Love
love changes everything about you. I know the sorrow that life can bring. It's love changes everything.
You'd make a good Irish tenor.
Heartbreaking.
Let me put that into context. First of all, do you guys think Michael Paul Gerard really was just making movies to kickstart his songwriting career?
I think he really was.
Anyway, as that song is playing, well done, Doctor.
Thank you.
We watch Bill and Chrissy make their way around town with a giant trash bag collecting aluminum cans. He's trying to open her horizons to what saving the world can bring to your soul
Hooked
and your
on you.
Spirit. Meanwhile, the detectives are across the street with binoculars. Binoculars masturbating.
Jacking each other off like a pair of jackals.
No, Fawkett and Nubs are not masturbating. But they are watching intently through binoculars every move Bill makes.
They're binoculating?
Well, they're sharing.
Binoculating?
They're sharing one pair of binoculars. Afterwards, Bill sits down in his bedroom with his trusty calculator, fucking nerd, and does some math. He figures out over the next 5 years... he'll need $50,000 for gas, insurance, and maintenance on the Pinto.
He loves that Pinto.
Buy like seven Pintos for that.
Seems pricey.
At this point, do you not? This is by the end of the
1990, you could buy a new compact vehicle for $12,000.
At this point, I was like, so you figured out what you need for the Pinto. Why didn't you just figure out what you needed more to buy a new car?
Again, he has an open wish. Why not just wish for $1 million? But it's Bill, not us.
The first thing he wished for.
He also needs $90,000 for college tuition plus med school. $40,000 more for 6 years of college than that Pinto upkeep.
Clearly not going to Stephen F. Austin. Or North Texas or Sam Houston State.
Leprechauns can only help you with so much. He needs another $50,000 for cost of living expenses, and then
go Jacks.
Factoring in 5% inflation, 3% cost of living increase, he tells Lepke that he's using his final wish to ask for $298,265.42.
Exeter, Fexeter, fee, fi, fo, flate. For 1/10 of the price, you'll go to Sam Houston State.
Actually, Doctor, I'm glad you said that. All of a sudden, a giant pile of cash appears on the bed, but Lepke didn't say it for the first time. He doesn't say a limerick.
He's drunk. Lepke's just passed out.
No, the director...
You should have held up the bottle and Lepke's just all something.
Leave me alone.
Lepke's got a noose around his neck.
Your fucking goddamn wishes.
If you had to hang out with Bill for this amount of time, would you kill yourself?
Oh, yeah.
So Lepke, how are you doing in there? Exeter, Flexeter, fee, fi, fo, fanny. I just want to make love to a tranny.
Poor Lepke. But no, dude, maybe if... Michael Paul Gerard or whatever the director concentrate on the screenwriting as much as the songwriting. He realized that he forgot to do a limerick
here. That's the problem here. No one concentrated on the screenwriting. Good call, Kate.
By this point in the movie, everyone had been paid. They didn't give a shit.
Strike three, Marge. I have a photographic memory.
Doctor, I am an internet film expert.
You are, sir. You are.
I just felt like dropping the ball. We got all these little cool rhymes and then nothing with all this cash on. So there's just a pile of money dumped on top of him. As Bill rolls around the giant stack of cash with glee, his mom, who's nowhere near as sexy and arousing as Chrissy's mom, starts banging on the door.
No, she is not.
She's always wearing like robes and a towel on her head. He takes forever. She knocks on the door demanding to see him right now. He takes forever shoveling the cash under his bed while the detectives continue to spy on him from across the street. When he finally answers the door, she asks if he was looking at his dirty magazines again. You know, the ones under your bed where half the pages are stuck together?
As if she doesn't know!
Well, it's certainly an awkward exchange between mother and son. And it really blows the whole wholesome image of Bill right out of the water, doesn't it?
You filthy sinner.
I'm a Puritan, earth-loving guy who whacks it every night.
Whacks it to Hustler.
To degrading Hustler magazines. Sinner. Fucking guy. I mean, we all had dirty magazines under our beds at
Exeter,
some point.
Exeter, Flexeter, fee, fi, bagorum. It turns out Bill's been jerking it to Penthouse Forum.
Yak boy, I know you had a treasure trove of those things.
Yeah.
King's Ransom of Dirty Magazines, if I remember correctly. But we weren't walking around like we were the second coming of Jesus Christ either. This guy's a hypocritical nerd.
That's right.
Big time.
That's right. I've got issues.
I'm so much better than all you guys. Now I'm going to go home and watch some...
You do have issues.
With Bill. I've got a lot of issues with this fucking nerd.
With Bill.
Extra flaxter, fee fi bagorn. It turns out Bill likes Asian porn.
Who doesn't?
Sick bastard.
Love changes.
I love the guy sticking up for everything Bill does. Oh, Chrissy, I just want to kiss you on the cheek. Oh, wow, that Bill's really an okay guy. Until he goes home to his bedroom. And then he pulls out the mystery shoebox. Fucking sick bastard. Speaking of sex, later that night we join Bill and Chrissy as they sit under the stars.
Is there any in this film?
Well, we join Bill and Chrissy under the stars, which in this movie is just a patch of grass with a flashlight shine down on them.
Perfect. Love changes everything.
With Chrissy filling Bill in on her sexual history.
I can just see my directorial notes. Shine a flashlight down on them.
That's
it'll
the,
be fine.
What does that flashlight represent? It's the Big Dipper. By the way, a guy named Big Dipper handled catering for the film. Well, she details in exact numbers how many hickeys she's had, how many times her ex, Brian McCullough, remember him, felt her above and below the bra, and so on and so forth. Bill explains that other than his prized dirty magazines, he doesn't really have much experience.
Right. I've stuck 85 different magazines pages together.
This week, I'm a deviant.
Exeter Flaxeter, fee-fi-fo-flap. Turns out Chrissy's got a case of the clap.
Tuttle roll. I don't want to hear about any of your exes.
Well, not at our age.
No. God, no. No. No.
Look, no. If I wanted to be depressed for 6 hours, I'd watch Roots. But no, go on. I want to hear more of this.
I'll bring it back around. Exeter, Flaxeter. Fee-fi-fo-flirt. Turns out Bill's favorite periodical is a magazine called Squirt.
This guy's... I'm telling you, man. This guy is not who he appears to be. She doesn't believe Bill that all he's had is his dirty magazines. In fact, she accuses him of holding back information, and then she flips and angrily accuses him of seeing Babette Dutoit, the French exchange student, behind her back. She just can't shake that he was in the shower with that French vixen, but again, just like that, all of a sudden she flips and says, you know what? She pulls him to the ground and they start making out.
Love changes everything.
As someone with a 4-year Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and absolutely no further schooling after that, I say with pretty good authority, this chick is both bipolar, what we call in the field is bipolar, and the world's most giant cock tease.
See you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday, Chrissy. My God.
Yeah, no, she's schizoid, man.
She's a lawyer. She
Come
is.
On. She is.
You know what, Bill? I'm out of here. You can go have Babette. Come here. Make out with me. Hell.
Run, Bill. Run.
Well, why do I say that she's a cock tease? You may think that's harsh, but as soon as she pulls him down to make out, our boy Bill reaches down to grab that ass, and she stops him. She let Tony grab all over that.
Exactly.
Ass. She stops Bill.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
So you were going to be like having gum stuck to your ass and the bleachers?
Let me explain. It turns out she's been reading Brooke Shields' autobiography, and she's decided
because who hasn't?
She's decided to remain a virgin until her wedding night. Bill shakes his head in despair, swearing to boycott all Brooke Shields' movies and books. Yeah, like that'd be hard.
Two of them?
All two of them.
I know you were a big Suddenly Susan fan, but other than that...
Exeter Flaxeter, Fee Fire Balloon. Turns out she's never seen the Blue Lagoon.
Oh, very poignant.
Then Bill flip-flops and says,
wasn't
you know
there
what?
A brother?
I'm sorry. Bill says he understands. And
oh, fuck Bill.
Now you're coming around. It took him till the movie was almost over. Okay. Now he's coming around.
Fucking nerd.
Recycling all that stuff, all the Earth Boy shit. Now all of a sudden the guy's a fucking whack.
You can only take so much,
whiskey.
Man.
Yeah, here it is.
You can only take so much.
Fuck Bill.
Fuck Bill.
Fuck that asshole. Well, he understands and supports her. In fact, he takes it one step further and asks Chrissy to marry him. And she accepts. What the fuck? They're like 17. They've been on one date to a miniature golf course.
Well, you know, back in the day,
when life expectancy was in your 40s and you lived on the prairie. Oh, wait, this isn't the 1700s. It's 1990.
You're living to at least 52.
He really wants to get laid.
I'll confess that in my undergrad years, the doctor had some of those tendencies. After one date,
I love you.
It's time to marry me.
I just want some time. I'll kill you.
We just play miniature golf together. I'll fucking kill you.
Did I mention that one hole at the miniature golf course that looked like a cock and balls? I forget. Did I say that? Okay.
Well, first of all, you keep referring to it as nauseam.
If you were Bill, wouldn't you be like? So I guess you started reading Brooke Shields' book after you were given a fucking hand job to Tony in the back of his Pontiac?
Exactly.
Brooke Shields okay with hand jobs, I guess.
2 days ago, you were, like, ready to get banged under the bleachers with gum on your ass.
Because if Brooke Shields is okay with handies, let's talk.
But now Bill's a nerd. He's like, I'll marry you.
How does it feel, Brooke feel about...
Yeah, marriage. That'll end all his problems.
Yeah, get him a woman. That'll make him happy.
That was a Simpsons quote, not mine.
Yeah, so the one I did was a Simpsons quote, too.
We're all doing Simpsons quotes.
I'm just laughing at Simpsons quotes.
That's a Simpsons interjection, sorry.
But seriously... The guy walked in on her with her panties off, jerking the dude off.
I'm sorry, that deserves a Simpsons interjection. Lenny is one of the first ones to get a plasma flat-screen TV, so he invites everybody over for a party at his apartment. And Marge's like, I wonder why Lenny's inviting us over. Maybe he's getting married. And Norma goes, why the hell would he want to do that? I mean, blessed flower of my life.
Ooh, blessed flower of my life. I will use that. Yeah, hey.
Well, the next morning, Bill packs
up. Hey, baby, you blessed flower of my life.
The next morning, Bill packs Lepke's beer bottle in an envelope and drops him in a mailbox to go back to Ireland. He's fulfilled his three wishes. What do you write on the envelope? Ireland?
This was 1990, man. It's pre-9/11. He just dropped it in an envelope. Wrote
Ireland.
Care of Al Jazeera and threw it in the mailbox.
Five stamps. Throw it in there.
It'll get there.
It'll get there.
But Lepke leaves him with the closing wisdom of...
The moment you stop believing in magic, that's when your life starts turning into a big pile of horse pucky.
It's so true.
That's true.
That's about when my life turned to shit.
That's true.
When did your guys' lives turn to shit?
About halfway through this movie.
A couple years ago, I decided I'd start doing this...
About the fourth time I was watching Getting Lucky.
I was doing all right.
I think it was last February when I turned the mics on for the first time.
That was 2 years ago.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a little more courage.
Friend said, hey, this is a podcast.
This is a podcast.
We've been doing this podcast for 2 years, and in no way is that depressing.
Hey, real quick, Yak Boy, we're going to drain this bottle of whiskey along with a case of beer here in a little over 2 hours.
Fantastic!
What whiskey are we drinking?
We are drinking Bushmills Black Bush.
I don't even know at this point.
What tie-in to the movie would Black Bush have?
Well, as we just spoke of earlier...
He said it.
We saw him, young Mr. Bill, clinging for dear life!
In a bush.
And the pubes were black.
It was a black.
And the pubes
bush.
Were jet black.
Carpet did not.
So
match
somebody
drapes.
Was dyeing
carpet
their hair.
Somebody was dyeing their hair.
You know, I'm.
Let's say it was Chrissy.
Exeter Flexer, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fapes, the carpet surely didn't match the drapes.
I agree. Lemke, you surly bastard.
I am a fan of
Irish consistency. The drapes. Oh,
consistency. We need consistency.
I thought you were going to say you're a fan of consistency. I always drink whiskey with my beer. I'm consistent in that way. Sip a beer, sip a whiskey. That's consistent.
To me, it's confusing. I don't know which glass to go to.
Speaking of which,
I just
if you see blonde, you expect blonde. If you see brown, you expect brown. If you see red, you need it.
Really, in today's age, because
yes,
if it's tangy and brown, well, you're in Cider Town. If it's juicy and yellow, you've got juice there, fella.
I mean, even back in high school, I just kind
of of course nowadays you won't expect anything.
Exactly, it'd
just be smooth, which is great. Like this whiskey.
Smooth and bald, just like Bushmills Black Bush Whiskey.
God damn. Unlike the doctor, you guys haven't been dating some single moms. Ain't nothing smooth about that shit. Sorry if I said too much.
Oh, Exeter Flexeter, Fee-Fi-Futch. The doctor apparently has spoken too much.
That might have been your greatest moment ever on the show.
Well, Bill, thanks. Bill, thanks, Lepke.
Sorry, Doc. I just got back from my tennis match. I'm going to jump in the shower. How do you really think it's going to make a difference, Susan? Let's just head to Chamberlain Seafood Grill and get this over with.
I'm going to spit up my beer, and I don't even know what Chamberlain Seafood Grill is, but I do know one thing. I'm not going there.
It's actually a classy place.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll become a sponsor of the show.
I'm sure they will.
When it's doctor seducing time, make it Chamberlain Seafood Grill time.
I think it might actually be called the Chamberlain Fish Market.
Even better.
Yak Boy, can we take your hat up one more notch just on that comment?
If you watch us on YouTube, Yak Boy's leprechaun hat is just, the more we drink, it just grows and grows and grows.
Exeter Flexeter, Fee-Fi-Fo-Furf. If you're a single mom, the doc will take you out for surf and turf.
Well, surf.
Surf.
I don't know what Golden Corral's calling it nowadays, but I'll buy it for you. Is what the doctor would say. I'm not buying anybody surf and turf.
Doc doesn't take no chicks to Golden Corral.
Oh, damn, my stuff.
Just the corral.
I think the Golden Corral could be what old Bill was trapped in back in the...
Could be.
Bill thanks Lepke, and the detectives watch it all unfold from across the street. Did you guys notice? Three times we've seen the detectives spying on Bill in different locations, but they're always behind the exact same bush. You couldn't take them to three different little spots and make them spy?
No, you couldn't.
And you know that next police budget meeting, they're asking for a second pair of binoculars. They're always having to share that one damn pair of binoculars.
Can you please get us another car besides this 1977 El Camino?
Well, Bill heads to school where he runs into his skateboarding saxophone playing best friend Tim, who asks him if he want to check out some limbs, which is Tim speak for climb a tree.
I thought it meant like go to a titty bar.
That's what I thought. Limbs, like humans with limbs.
No, once again, nerds.
Nerds. You know, Tut was checking out some limbs at Stephen F. Austin. No, that means go climb a tree together.
No, they had a very good arbor school.
No. They actually do. It's true.
It's a great school for forestry.
Again, if Hugh J. Ass knows how to wear headphones, please contact us. What was his name? Hugh?
All I know is, Yax, you're wearing that hat like a modern-day Peter Gozinha.
What's his name? Hugh P. Ecker?
Hugh Jack. I'm Hugh Pecker.
This backfired.
This
went wrong fast.
I was making a prank call. That's all right.
I'm calling my family on the phone here at the courtesy desk. My name is Hugh Pecker. Sorry, Mr. Pecker. We're just trying to make some stupid joke.
I understand. What a delightful young man.
What do you do for a living? I'm an internet asshole.
That's redundant.
I have a pretty big following among other internet assholes.
Again, redundancy.
They climb the tree together where Tim tells Bill that he finally got the courage to ask Babette out on a date, and she said yes.
So just like Can't Buy Me Love, when one nerd is accepted into cheerleader culture, the dominoes start to fall, and all of a sudden Babette is willing to go out with Tim. Bill tells Tim he proposed to Chrissy, asked her to marry him, which resonates no shock on Tim's face.
Awesome!
You know why?
Nerds.
He's not no, he's not an actor. He doesn't do...
I'm imagining Kay coming up to me midway through our senior year. I've asked Jenny to marry me. I'm like,
what?
You want to wait like a little bit?
No, Tim's like, oh. Well, the guy did just ask him to climb a tree.
Exeter Flexeter, fee fi fo fed. It turns out Tim was dropped on his head.
Tim special. But you know what? He tells her that Mrs. Shackler, mom, said no way. Speaking of hot and savory, Mrs. Shackler, we cut to her.
She wants to marry Bill.
Dude, we cut to her at the house, gutting out a turkey, scraping all the insides out. That's hot. And as she's pulling the guts out of this turkey, she's talking to Chrissy.
Chicken. It was not a turkey. It was
Chrissy.
A chicken.
Oh, it was a chicken?
Yeah.
Well, it was a chicken.
Nerd!
Who's buying whole chickens and taking the guts out?
Lots of people.
Miss Shackler, obviously.
That's what you have to do when you want a whole chicken.
That's true.
It's true.
Exeter Flexeter, fee fi chi. Turns out Kate and I don't know our poetry.
No, we do not.
All right, they're getting weaker. I need to regroup.
You need to regroup. Hey, whiskey helps.
I had some good ones. Damn it.
I drank some more whiskey. Well, she explains. Miss Shackler explains to the kids that in her smoky bedroom voice, she got married at 17 only because she had to. In other words, Chrissy, you're a mistake. And she doesn't want her daughter to make the same mistakes.
Oh, great, Mom, I'm a mistake.
That's what good parents do, boys.
That explains some things, though, because then if we realize that Chrissy was initially thrown into a dumpster, it might explain some of her intellect. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. That's why that dumpster refused to take that bottle Bill was throwing. It was the same dumpster that Chrissy's
afterbirth was in. Oh,
that
boy.
Dumpster has magical powers. That's the sequel.
Oh, God, no.
No.
Please let us not review the sequel.
The Unlucky Dumpster.
Getting Lucky Too, Lepke Boogaloo.
But no, that is what good parents do, boys. They try to steer their kids to the right path and hopefully avoid the pitfalls that they themselves made in their misguided youth. And you know Miss Shackler got into some real trouble in her youth.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. How much trouble, you ask? She reveals she's been divorced 3 fucking times.
But given the age of Chrissy, a senior in high school,
right?
Let's say 18.
Yeah. So those second two marriages were quickies.
So that all occurred within 18 years.
Yeah.
Mrs. Shackler's got a whole package of bubblegum on her ass.
And it would have had to have been before Chrissy became aware of her other two dads.
Her two dads?
She's been divorced how many times?
Oh, well, I don't think those guys probably played much of a parental role.
One of them was Rock again.
One was Rock.
Hey, I'll take your big sister.
This movie might be interesting with Rock.
We got married to little sister.
This movie might have been interesting with Rock.
Are we doing the sauna or what?
And bring the Speedo over.
Well, get this. She's very against it when Bill mentions that he saved up enough for med school. Fucking liar. You didn't save it. You wished a leprechaun for it. Oh, I guess Bill has no problem lying.
No, it's just violence he's against.
Wait a second. This is 1990, so you saved up like $80,000?
That's a lot of cans and a lot of bullshit because you didn't save up nothing.
Nerd.
When Miss Shackler hears, though, that he's going to be...
Why are you looking at me?
When Miss Shackler...
Own it. Own it like you own that blazer. Own it.
When Miss Shackler hears that Bill's going to be a doctor, all of a sudden, guess what? Cue the wedding bells. They have her approval.
See you next Tuesday, Mrs. Shackler.
They literally cut to wedding bells as Bill and Chrissy run out of the wedding chapel married.
Oh, God.
As they climb in the car with people throwing rice and shit, Chrissy tosses the bouquet over her shoulder, and who catches it? Babette, the French exchange student.
Yeah.
To which Tim next to her is like, yeah, sucker. Well, it's all coming together, fellas, especially for Bill as we see the words grand opening tonight written on the back windshield of the car.
Hey, can you do your Murphy line?
I certainly can, Mr. Turtle. For you, sir, I will. Axter Faxter, Fee Fi Fo Furfy, Mr. Cade, hand taught another Murphy.
Yes, it's working.
Why am I doing this? Don't want to give Tut more beer.
When you stop believing in magic, then your whole life is a big pile of horse bucky. Axter Faxter, Mr. Cade. Cody Lashica could use some more lemonade.
Well, as they drive off,
we can't get much drunker. We can't get much drunker. We can't get much drunker than this.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
That may have been. Well, I hate to make.
Don't be hasty.
I hate to make alliteration to other things in the doctor's life. I may have been a little premature there.
Ooh, much like Tony Chinooka. Speaking of Chinooka, where is this?
As they're driving
specimen.
Off, as they're driving off, though, did you notice that they drive out of the driveway of the church, which just so happens to be the same driveway of Bill's house, Chrissy's house? There's no church.
The high school, the cop station.
The high school. There's no money spent on it.
This town has three houses,
and this is supposed to take place in Beverly Hills. But it looks like a slum. Like, the neighbors look like... The houses look like shit.
I didn't... at this point, I'm just wanting this to be over.
Forget... The podcast or the movie?
Both.
Your life on it.
Well...
But I'm an internet professional, damn it.
They drive off, and that's the end of the movie, right?
Yes.
No!
No!
There's so much more to this.
Wrong.
Damn it, I thought
nerds.
As they drive off, Chrissy asks what happened to the Pinto because they're in a different car. Bill explains that it finally died and his dad gave him this new car as a wedding gift.
The 1990
LeBron. We haven't seen his dad, though. So who is this dad?
Chrissy says that's great, but she wants him to get it repainted to a color she likes better.
Oh, it's already starting.
Here we go.
So it begins.
Walk down the aisle. Here we go.
Well, they've been married now. 3 minutes?
We need to repaint this to eggplant.
Just saying. But you know what? The honeymoon is over before it begins. As they're driving off, Tony fucking Chinooka pops up out of the back seat.
Of course he does.
He's been hiding in there for 2 weeks. Try it on condoms.
Turns out those two...
He got that charge dropped down the tailgating.
Turns out those two nun-nuts cops got the rape charge reduced to indecent exposure. And as Bill screams out, where's the justice? Tony pushes his
nerd
ass...
That was actually funny.
Tony pushes his nerd ass out of the car and takes off.
That wasn't funny.
With Chrissy.
It's kind of funny.
It was funny.
Oh, sure. You guys have been in the jock roll.
Real quick, as the final, hopefully, the final act, this movie's got more endings than the last Lord of the Rings movie, for God's sake.
Don't put that in your DVD player.
You guys are way moved on. I'm the only one that seems to have stuck it out with the cigar all the way through.
I went all the way through.
Did you?
Yeah, I trashed it.
Real quick, nothing... No transitions, nothing ever popped up out of this thing.
Well,
it's an okay curiosity, but I think we all agree, nothing you would ever...
Yeah, I was actually, we had a conversation when the mics were off during the break. Mm. Man, the construction on it is really, really good. It's a nice feeling cigar. The burn line is great. The cut lines are great. It's a great constructed cigar, as you would expect from LFD. But as the doctor said, you know, if it's a great construction without the flavor, what is it? You know, that's a good point.
It's like pouring a beautiful beer that cascades down in a beautiful head. It looks gorgeous. You hold it up to the light. It's like, oh, my God, this looks amazing. You sip it, and it's like, man, nothing.
I'm going to take what you said and put that on my dating profile, though. It's an interesting curiosity, but nothing really.
I'm not going to be a second... I'm not going to buy it a second time around.
Yeah.
Axner Flaxner.
If you like, like Candela,
if you're a big Candela fan and you want a stronger one, go for it. It has strength that I have yet to experience in Candela. Other than that, I can't really say anything.
I agree. It's just not.
But they are different.
It's not what my profile likes. I like more of the Lajero tobacco taste. I like more of the full punch, which, like you said, this has more of a stronger profile than most Candelas do.
I think that's the Nicaraguan binders more than anything.
But at the same time, it also lacked the presence of what a stereotypical Candela has. And so when you're smoking a Candela, maybe you won't like it, because if you're looking for that grass texture, that grass taste, or that wheat taste, you're not really going to get it from the LFD.
So it's kind of an oddity.
It is an oddity. I would say try it, just to try it, but... Yeah. Judge for yourself. I'm not a fan of it. If somebody gave it to me, I'd be cool with it. Yeah. But I can't see me plucking down money for it.
No, not $7 when there's so many other options out there.
It's not a bad price point.
No, but the beer, I'll champion it.
Yes.
Great, tasty beer. Perfect. Sitting around and talking about leprechaun beer.
Absolutely.
Really smooth, really creamy. Yeah, big fan. Tuts either got something to say or he's zoned out.
I think I'm zoned out.
He's honest.
Perfect. Perfect.
Oh, God, it's one of those nights.
I'm just saying that, like, you know, my third can of Murphy's in. I don't know how many Bushmills in I'm in.
We're finishing that shit.
Nobody else out there does what we does. Does what we does?
Does what we does.
I'm talking like a leprechaun.
Nobody out there does what we does.
As for
Exeter, Flaxeter, Fee, Fi, Fo, Fish. It turns out we've all lost command of English.
I'll get it back through more of this.
Yes.
Give me thinking juice.
Drinking will help us plan.
As far as the beer goes, I mean, it's a nice head. It's a beautiful, beautiful
play. Now do you see why at the beginning of the show I added the word drinking to our St. Patrick's drinking extravaganza?
Yeah.
So as the car is racing off with Tony and Chrissy in it, something happens that I'll admit I didn't see coming. And I bet I can safely say none of you drunk asses ever saw coming either.
I didn't really care what came after this.
As Bill dusts himself off and watches Tony drive away...
The ending is what we were hoping for.
A scantily clad figure dressed only in animal furs appears on a nearby hilltop, riding on top of two horses.
You're correct. I did not suck. I did not fucking see that coming.
You are correct.
I'm still trying to figure out why.
I delivered the line, "What the fuck?
What the fuck?" Give it to me, Axe.
What the fuck?
He charges down to Bill, and although he can't let Bill borrow one of these horses, because, hey, I have 2 feet, so I need two horses.
The cool thing is that even in the edited version of this, where they were, like, picking the scenes, he, like, almost falls and slips twice on these horses.
This is clearly not a guy that rides around on these two horses every day. But they found a long-haired dude in some Conan gear to ride on these two horses.
I mean, at first I thought he was like a Native American, but then when it showed him, I was like, what is he?
He's like a barbarian.
Mongolian?
It's Subutai.
It does look like Subutai from Conan. But you know what, Bill? He does have a spare horse that he whistles for that comes over.
And he just goes...
kind of like in hour four when you guys want a beer. Hey, Kate.
That's what this movie was in minute 82. Everyone was drunk.
That's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club bat signal for another beer. I'm needed. to the bat fridge. Well, he does have another horse, complete a white horse with a saddle that comes up, and Bill jumps on him and starts chasing after Tony and Chrissy. But as the guy rides off on these two horses, you hear him mumble,
What the fuck? Fucking
asshole will never catch a car with a horse. Who was this guy? We never see him again.
He disappears. What the fuck was that?
Asshole number one on two horses?
Well, in this movie, it's asshole number six or seven, but...
Well, Bill most likely wouldn't have caught up with them if Tony hadn't pulled over and dragged Chrissy across a field until they stumbled across a random middle-aged couple grilling out in the middle of nowhere. Tony grabs one of their shish kebabs off the grill and waves it at Bill aggressively. Bill, being the stand-up nerd that he is, says, "Hey, you're ruining these poor people's picnic." To which Tony replies, "Fuck them." I like that.
I am in agreement with Tony.
I'm with Tony on this. These two weirdos grilling in the middle of the field, fuck them.
And there, you know what? Those people don't do anything. Don't do anything.
What would you do if you're out grilling with your girl and some weirdo pulls up on a horse and a chicken handcuffs and they start fighting with your shish kebabs?
First, I would look down.
Well, first of all, if you're wearing that hat, you can't do anything.
Well, first I would look down. I'd be like, oh my God.
I'd say, Exeter Flexeter, Fee Fi Fo Fice, the movie's almost over, thank the fuck Christ.
Seemingly it's almost over, but it's not. Sorry.
It's not. Sorry. This is only one of eight endings.
Bill asks...
Still got that metal practice thing going, sorry.
Bill asks permission from the couple to grab their other shish kebab off the grill, and a sword fight ensues. Just like his dirty talk while attempting to make love to her earlier, Tony says he wants to fight just like the animals do it. The two male bucks fighting it out while the rutting female looks on. She can't help but get wet watching us do battle because knowing she has to fuck the winner makes her so hot down there. This guy's got issues. And, to make it more weirder, we cut back and forth between this sword fight with the shish kebabs to two slow-motion horses in the background, like, foreplaying, rubbing against each other and, like, bucking and...
No, they're fighting.
They're fighting.
They're doing something.
They're doing something.
We should try that in the bar one night. Cade and I are going to fight. You're going to fuck the winner. She slits her wrists.
Oh, God. Tonight, Cade and Mincy are finally letting it all go. They're fighting.
She slits her wrists.
I'm done with it.
Winner gets to do you. Yeah, guess what? Exeter, Flexeter, just kill me.
Exeter, Flexeter. I don't know.
What rhymes with seppuku?
What rhymes with blow my fucking brains out?
Well, this is why you watch a movie like Getting Lucky, boys. You ask, why do we watch this movie? This is why you watch this movie. If you're one of those elitist film snobs that think you've seen everything, you've watched all the foreign films and the...
You have not.
You've watched your Roger Altman and your Francis Ford Coppola. You've seen it all. You have opinions. I guarantee you never saw this shit in a movie. No. Two dudes fighting with shish kebabs while some horses fuck in the background?
It's Jean-Luc Retard.
This is why you guys are friends with me. This moment.
Oh, I'm questioning.
It's totally bananas.
I am questioning so many life choices right now.
I guarantee those fucking nerds never seen this shit.
You're welcome.
You know what? I never saw this shit.
You're welcome. It's fucking bananas. It's crazy.
It is bananas.
Well, just as Tony, he finally sweeps all the tomatoes and peppers and meat off of Bill's shish kebab.
Do you notice they both seem to like get more disparaged as the meat and stuff flew off of the kebab? I would think it would be better if he had nothing on it, but like if stuff flies off, like, ugh.
No, like he shot a mushroom off. It was like, ugh. My mushrooms. Right then, as Bill smells the victory of stabbing, he raises his shish kebab spear, one last victorious thing, and he jams it right into a beehive, which then an army of angry honeybees swarm down and start chasing Bill, start chasing Tony.
An army of angry animated cartoon bees are attacking Tony.
That was their CGI budget.
Bees! Yeah. They're digging into my flesh! It is.
You see these bees chase Bill or Tony for quite some ways. Chrissy calls out, "Bill, my hero," as the picnicking couple starts applauding everything in delight. Hey, you know what? It's our Sunday. We came out here to shish kebab. That didn't work out. But good for you. Good for you. You ruined our picnic, but
God bless you.
It would be over yet.
Exeter, Flexeter, Fee Fi Foro. Thank God the doctor did that truck stop cocaine he picked up in Hillsboro.
Thanks for sharing.
And that's the end of the movie, right?
Thank God.
Yes.
Wrong.
No.
Damn it. Damn you.
Farewell to the King style, baby. We keep going. We keep going.
We cut to a cheap motel where Bill is trying to remove the handcuffs that Tony shackled Chrissy with.
Oh, God, we're not even close. Oh, keep going.
Using a small little fingernail file. That's going to take, what, 10 years to get on?
Well, because it's case-hardened steel. Well, guess what? Chrissy, never going to happen.
Chrissy's complaining about how long it's taking. Imagine that. Okay, Chrissy's married now, and she's complaining.
See you next Tuesday.
Headline news.
17 in life, you got it. 17 in life to go. Your crime is time, and you're wed, and you're 17.
Well, she's making it clear she's not happy. When the two detectives...
That was funny. She made it clear she's not happy.
I don't know. Anything Bill could do would make her smile.
When all of a sudden the two detectives kicked down the door. Forgot about them.
Fuck Nuts and Tub?
Fuck Nuts and Nubs.
Oh.
They demand to know what Bill did with that package that he shipped to Ireland. They were going to track it, but it got lost in the mail.
All he had to do was say, "Hey guys, I'm married now."
Oh, we're out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
It's like, what is it, Hot Shots Part 2? You were able to withstand pain. I was married. He's like, twice. Ooh.
After 6 weeks of intense surveillance, these guys finally give up and just ask Bill, "What are you doing illegally?" Our investigation has turned up nothing. Just tell us.
We're horrible investigators.
Tell us what you did wrong.
Can you incriminate yourself? Because we've got nothing.
Well, we also learn. This is where we learn their names are Detective Fawkett and Nubs. Like Crockett and Tubbs. Ugh. Anyhow, Bill explains that he can't explain the unexplainable, but when both them and Chrissy are like, Chrissy's like, yeah, Bill, what did you send to Ireland? She wants answers.
All right, I'll tell you the truth.
My God. She's got a ring on her finger. She wants some answers.
Ugh.
What just happened?
Our two female listeners just turned us off. That's what happened.
We still got one.
Exeter, Flexeter, Fee Fi Fo Fops. Turns out they're a pair of blowjob cops.
Sorry.
Well, Bill has no choice but to tell the whole story about the recovering alcoholic leprechaun and Bill's quest to help him remove the goblin's curse. Chrissy just buries her head in her hands like, oh, God, I can't believe I just married this guy at 16.
Because
that's his fault.
But he is going to be a doctor.
The sooner Bill learns everything's his fault, the better.
2 weeks ago, you were just asking to keep. 2 weeks ago, you were just asking to keep the stale popcorn out of your ass.
You know what?
Now all of a sudden you've got stale.
All there,
dude.
It's all there.
Full hat. Yak boy, the leprechaun hat is fully erect. Well, he tells the whole sordid tale about Lepke, and the cops determine, you know what? We can't prove this guy's selling drugs, but I think there's a real good case here. He's taking them.
I need this.
They then correctly conclude that Tony Chinooka was giving them the dry ream the whole time.
The dry what?
The dry ream.
The dry ream.
In other words, he's been fucking him with no grease on this drug dealer story.
Okay.
So they ask... They're like, all right, we're out of here. Hey, Bill, any idea where we can find Tony Chinooka? To which Bill smiles and says, you know, the last time I saw Tony, he was copping a buzz out at the state park. Get it?
Get it? Buzz? Buzz? Get it?
3 hours into this fucking movie, and the guy finally showed some personality. Little bit of wit, finally.
Finally.
It's a miracle, but it's way too little, way too late. Doctor, too little, too late?
Too little, too late, indeed.
The detectives toss Bill a spare handcuff key and head out to arrest Tony Chinooka, which I really wish they made that Odyssey a sequel.
those two cops chasing Tony Chinooka across the country?
No. I'm surprised they didn't extend this movie by another 45 minutes doing that scene.
I would love to see that sequel, but as we learned from Mrs. Shackler, Chrissy's sexy mom, we can't get everything we want in life. I learned that when she was gutting out that chicken.
I'm just hoping that the movie's over at this point.
Once they're gone, Bill uncorks the non-alcoholic champagne because he's a nerd. And guess who's inside the bottle? Doctor?
It's Lepke.
Lepke's there. What? What's he doing there?
Exeter, Flexeter. Cow, fox, goose, and duck. Well, Bill, what do you say? You finally have a fuck.
Lepke just wants to watch. Lepke's a voyager.
A voyeur.
Remember that when Bill corrects Chrissy? She's like, what are you, some kind of voyager that likes to watch people having sex? He's like, actually, Chrissy, it's voyeur. Because he reads all those fucking penthouse forums. And she's like, oh, did you learn that French term from Babette?
It's like, no, I'm just correcting you because you're stupid, you dumb bitch.
Again, their marriage is starting off firing on all cylinders. But guess what? They see Lepke in the bottle, and the movie's over. The real movie's over.
Thank God.
Thank God, man.
Real quick, the end credits we talked about. There was a credit for spiritual guidance. A guy named Guru Rama Corncob up your butt. Oh, but it was God. All one word. Rama Corncob up your butt.
He's teaching our jazzercise class at 6:30 tomorrow.
Their Foley artist was Libby A. Majora. And props in the movie were handled by Valgina. And so on and so forth. At the very end, before it cuts to black, at the very end of the credits, we hear a voice yell out. Did you hear this? Damn, what the hell was that?
No, I didn't, because I bailed. I bailed.
Was actually, that voice said it at the exact same time I said it. What the fuck was that? And a voice just comes out and says that. Boom, movie over.
Well,
what a movie, huh?
What a movie.
I can not so proudly say that nobody has ever given Getting Lucky this kind of treatment. I'm ashamed to say that my name is tied to it.
Are you really ashamed?
No,
this is
what
we do.
It is what we do.
And as Cigar Maestro and one of the best guys in the business said, nobody does it better than us.
This will make you feel better.
You know?
Exeter, Flexeter. East, west, south, north. Matt Cade choked a hooker in downtown Fort Worth.
You can't prove that. No. We do what we do very well, and tonight is case in point. If you like audiobooks and you like film novelizations, we combine the two. We tell you what a movie's about in 3 hours, and we make it, like tonight's case, much more interesting than the movie ever was itself.
That's, I can be hired to sing at parties and weddings.
The funny thing was is that I was complaining to my wife about just how shitty this movie is. And she was like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, make gold of it. We make just...
Like a leprechaun makes gold?
Did she then look at you and go, you know, I'd like some chocolate and some flowers?
Meet me in 5 minutes under the bleachers.
Meet me on the back deck in 5 minutes.
No, underneath. Meet me underneath the deck in 5 minutes.
I heard you say that to the bug guy this afternoon. I say it to a lot of people. What you do with it is it's in your court now.
I'm just throwing it out there. See if I got any takers.
Look, boys, they can't all be that. They can't all be.
Way to deflect attention. This movie was a piece of shit.
It was
terrible.
It really was terrible.
It was a fucking monster.
I'm just saying, of all the stuff that I've heard from Troma, and that this was my experience, and if they're all like this,
no, they're not
Troma.
All like this. There's usually way more TNA. There's way more smart humor. Get that hat away from me, you son of a bitch.
Sorry.
Unless you have a bite-sized Hershey, you better keep that thing away from me.
Sorry. The hat has a mind of its own.
But you know what? There's something about turning lemons into lemonade, and I think we did that tonight.
Sure. I go with Paul Rudd's line, forgetting Sarah Marshall.
So when life gives you lemons, just say fuck it and bail.
Well, we didn't have the luxury of bailing, so we did it, and hopefully it was a fun episode.
It was a fun episode, way more fun than this movie deserved.
Hopefully listening or watching, you'll have as much fun as we did drinking a case of Murphy's and drinking an entire fucking bottle of Black Bush whiskey.
Yeah.
Because, good God, if you watched this movie, you needed it. Now it all makes perfect sense why the guy came on before the movie and told how much total shit
this movie was. He
basically
warned us not to watch it.
He pretty much did. Why didn't we listen?
Well, he was caressing a bearded guy in a tutu.
He wasn't exactly the
sage, wise prophet we were. Lloyd Kaufman was the one we needed, not the one we were expecting.
I mean, if it wasn't Dean, girl, rub my bottom or whatever, then we could totally believe him.
I think we made it. Hopefully, you don't have to watch the movie now. You got our take on it, and it's way more entertaining than anything you'll see. But go ahead and watch the movie, then listen to the show. And
here's what I know:
just watch the show. Just watch
it's St. Patrick's Day. You're going to be doing some fucked up shit. This is just going to be one of those things, man. It's St.
Look
Patrick's
at me.
Day. Just
I'm
do
the
it.
Prime Minister of Ireland.
I think I'm the Prime Minister.
Here you are, the Prime Minister of Ireland. Yeah, right.
One last order of business. I went on Facebook earlier and asked our loyal followers to submit a question. Try something new.
In the question box. All right.
As soon as I saw that, you didn't tell us that you were doing this.
No, I just thought I'd try something new tonight. I was like, if you got a question about cigars, beer, movies, whatever, send it to us, and we'll. If you're lucky enough, we'll answer it on the air.
Yeah.
So I picked one.
It wasn't my mom, was it?
Yes.
Oh, I saw she submitted something.
It's from my mom. Will you kill yourself?
Please tell. I mean. Jay Tuttle, that's too obvious. Please tell Jason T to stop hanging out with you assholes.
Sincerely, Jay Tuttle.
I'll go to the next question. I actually wrote that one.
Sincerely, Jay.
That was
Jen
more of a demand,
T.
not a question.
Here's this week's question, boys. And if this is a hit, we'll keep doing this. Quote, I notice you guys have never done a Marvel film. Is there a reason why? I was watching Doctor Strange over the weekend, and I would love to hear you guys discuss it. Top of the hill, dudes. He gave us the top of the hill.
All right.
Dude. Top of the hill.
Hank, that's from Hank in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, fantastic. No shit. All right.
You got to imagine.
They're not doing much.
Anchorage, Alaska, they got, 30 days of darkness? we are there.
All right, you know what? Hey, I think we should all owe Hank an honest answer.
My immediate answer to this is, here's why we don't do Marvel films. One, they're 3 hours long. There's so much going on and so much backstory that we'd have to kind of...
Well, under our timeline, that would be a six-hour
podcast.
It would
be like a six-hour podcast. Explain the backstory.
3 hours of that explaining why everything I didn't like, Cody would come in, well, it wasn't... The comic would... If you read the comic...
We are comic. At least Cody and I are comic nerds. Cody is like.
Did streamline all three Expendables movies into a 2-hour podcast. That was our first podcast.
Our first episode, and we left a lot of shit on the.
I love it.
But.
A lot of meat on the bone.
You know, it is one of those things where, you know, whenever we get together on Tuesday nights away from the show and we talk about these comic book movies. There is so much because, especially Cody, is so well-versed in comics. Anything you have problems with the movie, well, if you had read issues 46 through 53, you'd know that, well, I think these movies should stand on their own weight. I shouldn't have to read. And speaking to Hank's question,
but
I watched Doctor Strange recently, and I thought it was the weakest of the Marvel films that I've seen.
Actually?
I thought he was an asshole leading up to it,
to becoming a hero.
Strange kind of was an asshole.
But he is.
All right, well, I don't want to watch an asshole for 3 hours.
I had no desire to
see this
movie.
You just watched an asshole for 3 hours.
Exactly. Bill was an asshole.
Bill was my kind of asshole.
To Kate's point...
He was a nerd. You were totally against it for 2 hours.
To Kate's point, when first Marvel movies came out...
Potato.
In 2000, the very first X-Men movie.
You're a baked potato.
And I remember reading a review of the very first X-Men movie. Came out in 2000. And a reviewer had talked about how good it was and said that whether you were somebody who religiously read every X-Men book or knew nothing about it, this was still going to be a good movie.
No, it wasn't.
But I think to Cade's point, you're right. I mean, they are for the fans, but there needs to be something said for can you enjoy it if you really don't know a whole lot about it.
Captain America.
It is to really, to my standpoint, to really answer Hank's question, it is too involved for us.
Much so, a much bigger labyrinth of storylines.
But thank you, Hank.
Character development. But here's the thing, especially with Doctor Strange, just because he mentioned it, where Iron Man started with a cocky weapons developer who had to. We saw that change and what forced that change. With Doctor Strange, I saw none of that. I saw. All of a sudden, it was like 2 hours in, like, oh, wait, he has to turn from an asshole to a good guy. There was no moment. He was like, oh, I guess I'll defend the Earth now. He was the same annoying asshole all the way through the movie.
But see, I think that we could do a treatment to the Marvel movies to where that's a great point. I think that it's a good juxtaposition between
bad villain,
the comic,
unmemorable villain.
No, if you have like the comic book nerds and me and Cody,
tip it all the way up.
Well, juxtaposed to you guys who don't really follow canon but watch the movie, I think that that's a good treatment to good treatment to have.
Well, Hank,
I'm with you, I'm with you, dude. I'd like to do more Marvel stuff. One of the problems that I see is that Marvel movies and comic book heroes, as much as I'm a fan of them, and good God, I watch every comic book source from shit. Everything that gets released out there, I like to get my teeth into. They're so fucking prevalent now to where I'm just like, oh, great, another comic book IP going to movie.
Switching from Marvel to DC, I'm a big fan of the Gotham TV show.
My number one complaint is, are they going to actually pay attention to the source material?
No. I'm sorry, Civil War, I like Civil War as a standalone movie.
But that's my point.
But when you contrast that to the comics that was Civil War...
Correct.
It doesn't even...
This is why we don't do Marvel movies.
Pretty much made your point.
It doesn't even... Shine a light.
Nobody
on
gives
Civil
a shit
War.
About. Remember in graphic novel number 17 where
we'd have a 24-hour
Thanos
podcast.
Took a dump and Doctor Strange wiped his ass and it was no. Nobody cares about that. Yes, they do.
That's my point.
You guys do care.
They don't.
Fucking nerds.
There's too much source material. They pick and choose and they leave out relevant points.
But to answer your question, Hank, Doctor Strange failed because the actor couldn't.
Oh, don't you talk bad about Benedict.
What?
Hack actor.
What?
Exeter Flexeter, Fee-Fi-Fo fan. Hand me another Murphy's in the snack mix can.
That I can respond to. He did nothing to elevate that character or do anything interesting with
it. Shut your mouth.
When he was making all those jokes about Beyonce and all that, it seemed like a cocky English guy who really didn't understand.
That was fucking Doctor Strange.
Oh, I'm supposed to get behind a two-hour movie where the guy's an asshole.
Yes.
Guess what?
Doctor Strange is an asshole.
Grab a camera, film me for 3 hours.
I'm sorry, Tony Stark is an asshole.
I can give you... Tony Stark has a moment. He has a real actor.
He's an asshole.
He has an actor playing it that can convey changes in character, changes in motivations,
He's got
changes of motivations of an asshole.
And
boom,
he sells it. I know people.
That's my point.
Cumberbatch didn't sell it one bit.
To your point,
because
and to what
the
I said
assholes
about,
didn't give him that moment.
To your point, to what
he
I said
sell
about X-Men, I
agree.
I know people
I totally,
who do.
That's just
I
bad
totally agree.
Directing.
Directing.
It's story writing.
Bill Higgins is a great actor.
No,
just,
Benedict Cumberbatch is a great actor.
Now, Harry B. Bush is the guy that's supposed to be in charge of this.
It was all Michael Pulgarcio's fault.
The chick playing Chrissy Shackler should have gotten 3 Golden Globe Awards by now, but Michael Paul Gerard is a shitty director.
She won the Swollen Globe Awards.
Tits like a sparrow.
Love changes everything.
He got that one.
Love changes everything about you.
I'm sorry, at some point as an actor, you got to step up and be like, you know what? I own this character.
To answer your question, honestly,
this is
someone doesn't like Marvel.
That's not true. I watch it all, and I like a lot of it. I like a lot of it. I like what Chris Evans has done with Captain America. I like what Downey Jr. has done with Iron Man. I like...
Chris Evans, I would probably say, is my
favorite.
I love
what D'Onofrio has done with the Kingpin.
Oh,
love Daredevil. I got problems with Jessica Jones. I got huge problems with Luke Cage. Love Daredevil.
I liked Ant-Man.
I liked Ant-Man, too.
I was kind of mad on Ant-Man.
I liked it.
I had problems with the Michael Douglas scenes because I was thinking about Catherine Zeta. I'm like,
he's got a Catherine Zeta-Jones. He's already pointed that out. He's got a Catherine Zeta-Jones problem.
You know, she's bipolar.
You're bipolar.
That's true.
I'm bipolar. You know what? I probably shut up. Actually, Yak Boy, I'm sorry. I'll kill you.
No, this is the happiest night of my life. Hey, son, I got tickets to the circus.
This weekend, Dad.
Hank in Anchorage, Alaska. I hope we answered your question.
We did.
He's like, God damn! I wish you guys had shut up 5 minutes ago.
You know what? I used to be a fan.
Well,
did we have fun, boys?
Yes.
Yes.
Always. As always.
That's all that counts, really.
Yes. Did we drink a delicious beer?
Yes.
Yes,
we did.
We did. Did we drink... Well, wait. Did we completely finish a bottle of whiskey in one sitting?
Oh, happy St. Patty's Day.
Your heart makes a hole.
Yes, we did.
Happy St. Patty's Day.
We can't get much closer.
We can't get much closer. We can't get much closer.
Hey, send some happy thoughts out.
We can't get much closer than this.
Can we just show like me riding a bicycle, hugging like a bottle of whiskey?
Send some happy thoughts out to Cody because he's going to be dealing with my drunk ass on St. Patty's Day and a whole bunch of other drunk
asses. I'm sure Todd will be the only drunk guy up there.
If only that was the case. When's
the shindig going on?
Friday.
Oh, it's on a Friday. It's even worse.
Yes.
What do they call St. Patty's Day? Amateur night?
That's what old man Tom's calls it.
Well, that New Year's Eve.
I don't go out on either one of those. Yeah. I laugh at your four winds. I laugh at your drinking holidays. I'll be right here in the corner of no hope.
The doctor calls those Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays.
Boys, what an I think we lived up to the extravaganza part of the show.
We definitely lived up to the drinking part of the show.
Here we did.
Yes.
Next year it's going to be the third annual St. Patrick's Day drinking bonanza.
Bonanza.
We're gonna do a bonanza.
We gotta take it up a notch. It's a bonanza.
I remember when I was young.
I can't wait.
Can we practice with the box social?
You and your box social. I still don't know what that is.
What about a hoop nanny?
I'll explain it to you.
When I was young, before the advent of internet radio and all this stuff, I remember there was a radio station there in Lufkin, Texas. A DJ pretended to get drunk on air, and then he got fired for New Year's. It was New Year's. He was pretending to get drunk, celebrating New Year's, and he got fired for pretending to get drunk.
His name was Jason Tuttle.
We live in a totally different age, man. Totally different age.
I gotta admit to you guys, I've been pretending.
Have you?
Have you?
That is your fifth Murphy's We've downed a bottle of whiskey. I don't think pretending is there.
Well, there were the pregame warm-up beers, too. But you know what Steve Sock has said? I want to repeat. Steve Sock has said it. We are very good at what we do.
Your heart makes a hole in one.
We're not exactly sure what we do, but we are damn good doing
I always, whether it was filmmakers or musicians, I always respected the guys that were doing something that nobody else was doing. And that's us, baby. I'm looking at you in that fucking hat. I'm looking at the doctor chugging his whiskey. I'm looking at Tuttle questioning all his life decisions up to this point. You're not going to get that anywhere else, folks.
You're not going to get that, Cade, ever. That's the point of this hat. So that I can scream!
And if you're listening to this on the podcast, you need to switch over to the YouTube.
Well, nobody should be listening to that. You should be watching.
Don't listen to other people as they speak to you. Only listen to me. Keep drinking.
I have no plans to stop.
Exeter Flexeter, have some class. Watch YouTube. Don't be an ass.
He's the doctor.
Drink.
Wise words.
I'm drinking.
All right.
Are you drinking yet?
It's like that children's book I read to my kids, Goodbye Whiskey. I'm not listening to you unless you
talk. Let me tell you, I have so many opinions, and I want to share them all
We can't get much stronger.
Tut, what are some links for the people at home?
God, if I was sober enough, I could actually, like, give you all the links.
Check us out on the web. Listen to the words. We are the number one internet cigar beer podcast.
Damn straight we are.
Don't be like the people who jack off to watching jackals.
Don't be like jackals who all they do is jack each other off, or giraffes giving each other deep throats.
Alright, so deer trying to lick their own ass.
Join us on.
There's some weird ones in there too, wasn't it? Join us. Look at the hyena trying to lick his own anus. Can you imagine the pleasure?
When you're when you're licking your own ass, join us on Twitter at TNCCcast.
Twitter!
Or hit us on Instagram, TNCC underscore podcast.
Welcome join to another episode of Mutual of Homahore.
Join us.
We're actually going on tour with the Jonas Brothers.
They're all dead.
Well, they will be. If I have anything to do with it.
Join us on Facebook. Hey man, we'd like to have a couple drinks before the show.
Alright. Couple drinks, huh?
Here they are, the Jonas Brothers. We wander out. Yeah. Alright.
I thought they were something else.
No, this is us.
Like, what's your first song? We can't get much closer.
That's not a Jonas Brothers song.
It should be. We're the Ignore Us Brothers.
Here's our female opening act, Miley Virus.
Obligatory Amazon plug. If you're shopping on Amazon, go to our site first.
Support
Click
us.
On the Amazon deal and then do your shopping. We get a little kickback. We pay our bills through that.
Our bills.
All. Please. All of our bills.
Bushmills Black Bush whiskey is not cheap.
We need more whiskey.
But it did the trick, though, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you tomorrow. No, I'll tell you Sunday.
It's October.
No, we're going to have a great show next week.
I'm going to go ahead and try to get this thing fast forwarded.
The old... dude, let's try to add some class to end this thing out.
Exeter Flexeter, let's add some class. All you rotten bastards can kiss the ass!
He's so drunk, he couldn't rhyme.
I'm trying to channel my inner Garrison Keillor. Oh, God, Garrison Keillor!
At the box... I rhymed. You were so drunk, you weren't ready for it.
It was a hot day in July.
It was a hot summer down at the box lunch social as Cade and Tut sipped their whiskey like...
You used box social.
I did. I tried to work it in there.
I don't know what it was, but it sounded like something they do in Lake Wobegon.
Meanwhile, at the Hot Corn Fest, they...
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Doom, Gorilla Grodd and Solomon Grundy were the jacking wind. Each other off while watching Jackal films.
The wind blew.
The wind like blew through Cade's pint glass as Toy Man gave him another shot of Black Bush whiskey.
Meanwhile, Cheetah and Gorilla Grodd had a threesome with Black Mantis and Sinestro.
That's what I want to be, boys. I want to be the Prairie Home Companion.
Nice Gorilla Grodd reference.
I want to be the Prairie Home Companion for drunken losers.
Well, let's just wrap
we
it
definitely
up.
Are that.
Let's just.
Did we accomplish that?
I think we have.
Yes, we did.
Put would you, would you like the doctor? Hey, the doctor could start writing a weekly web entry on Prairie Home Losers about our adventures.
I guarantee you, Garrison Keillor just listened to this podcast and said, "You drunk fucks."
I've done public radio for 40 years, and if I had any idea that these fucking numbnuts would.
This would be my legacy.
Oh, man. There's room for everybody at the table, isn't there?
No, but there's room for the four of us.
Well,
like Cousin Eddie, we're showing up at
Christmas. Hey, let's do the gentleman's thing, which Bill could never really get a grasp on, let alone Tony Chinooka. Let's end on a high note. May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Happy St. Patrick's Day, you fucking baked potatoes.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. We've been going to have you a good old-fashioned Irish time.
Sayonara, motherfuckers.
Sayonara.
To learn more about the time a horny leprechaun crawled up my pants and helped me win the big St. Paddy's Day dance-off at McSorley's Irish Pub / Pizza Hut Express in the Akron-Canton International Airport, go to YouTube and type in a search for Strange Man Arrested at Airport Restaurant with Wang Cotton Zipper. I think the video speaks for itself. Hey, Dancing with the Stars? Call me. Well, in the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and libations enjoyed on tonight's episode, you can visit www.famous-smoke.com and www.murphys.com. No, Wang was the name of the leprechaun. Yeah, seriously. Wang's an Irish name, isn't it? That's what he told me. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BrienSimple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.